knowledge fight. And Jordan, I am sweating. KnowledgeFight.com. It's time to pray.
I have great respect for Knowledge Fight.
Knowledge Fight. I'm sick of them posing as if they're the good guys, saying we are the bad guys. Knowledge Fight.
Dan and Jordan.
Knowledge Fight.
I need money. Andy in Kansas. Stop it. Andy in Kansas. Andy. It's time to pray. Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a Christian caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
Knowledge Fight.
KnowledgeFight.com. I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I'm Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes. Like to sit around, worship at the altar of Celine, and talk a little bit about Alex Jones.
Oh, indeed we are. Dan.
Jordan.
Dan.
Jordan.
Quick question for you.
What's up?
What's your bright spot today, buddy?
My bright spot today, Jordan, is it's the new year.
It is the new year.
Happy New Year, everybody. Mm-hmm. We're recording this before the new year.
Yeah, that's true.
We're going to pretend it's the new year. Oh, my God. I rang in the new year in style.
Did you?
I was at the bar at the top of the Aon
bar.
Center. Popping bottles of champagne with all the Chicago celebrities.
What's the one?
Vince
Dom?
Vaughn was there. Oprah was there.
Dom Perignon.
Yes.
Flowing.
You know those champagne glass towers where
sure.
they pour the...
Yes, one of those things going. Yeah.
But it was never ending. Bottomless. Ooh.
Bottomless champagne tower.
And everyone was bottomless.
Everyone was bottomless?
It was crazy.
It was a bottomless
bacchanal.
Party.
It was a bacchanal bottomless affair.
The old triple B.
Yeah.
Bottomless bacchanal, bottomless affair.
Ringing in the new year and stuff. And I didn't do anything,
no.
I'm sure.
No,
at this
no.
point, I don't know. It's still in the future, but I'm sure I did nothing.
My family has done a new thing now where we're starting to celebrate Christmas over New Year.
Sure.
That way,
mentioned that.
Yeah, that way we can all ignore the New Year holiday.
Mm, and Christmas, sort of.
Yeah. No, everybody goes to bed at like 9.
Uh-huh.
It's great. Yeah.
It was fun because you said, you mentioned a little bit after Christmas.
Sure.
They're like, it's been a little bit calm this year. And I was thinking to myself, yeah, that's probably because you're yet to do Christmas. Hey, not a whole lot's happened. It's been pretty tame year. Yes.
Nice.
Give it a week.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's fair.
I hope everyone had a good new year. Hey, you know, there's ultimate potential for this year. You know, we definitely have a feeling that things are going to be shit.
Sure.
2024, election.
It's trouble.
Not good.
Not good.
Primaries. Weeks away.
Could be an issue.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're in for it. But maybe we can hold on to a little bit of that optimism that comes along with the new year every year. We can feel it for a minute, even if we have to let it go.
Right.
You know, just grasp some of the what can happen.
Sure.
As opposed to what's probably going to happen.
Think about something. Think what's a good thing that happened in 2023. One good thing, and then just roll it into 2024.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because listen, we're all going to watch everything crumble.
Yeah.
But if you got one good thing, roll it into the next year.
Find that one good thing, boil down the energy
absolutely.
Of it, and make it your steez for 2024.
Put it on your face like war paint and walk down the streets. Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
So
what's
your bright spot?
My bright spot is tennis!
Oh, it's been a while.
It has been a while. The new season, 2024 season starts tomorrow.
You just said something very interesting.
What's that?
I didn't realize they had a season.
Yeah, they have a season.
Okay.
I mean, it's harder for you to have a season if your sport's global on account of the seasons are always happening.
Sure.
Right? So,
and it's something that can be played indoors and outdoors.
Right.
And it just doesn't feel the same as, like, I know the NBA has a season.
Right.
I know the NHL, MLB,
sure.
they all have seasons.
Sure.
Just doesn't feel right to me that tennis has a season.
Yeah, I mean, it's not really a season so much as, like, at the end of the year, they take about a month off.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's, you know, it's like school has a summer. It's more like that.
It's a circuit.
It is a circuit.
That's
Good
the
call.
Other part of it, too, is that, like, it's not teams that all play.
Yeah.
You have to qualify for things. And it's individual. That makes it more difficult to put my head into a season.
Yeah, it is a little bit strange like that.
So how do we kick it off?
Brisbane. In Australia, you know who's coming back, my man?
Djokovic?
Rafael Nadal.
Rafa.
Spent a year out with an injury, 37 years old. Mm. Man's only got 1 year left. This is his retirement tour.
What a story we have unfolding in front of us.
Right? We're going to watch the man try and win his 15th French Open.
Mm-hmm.
And then hopefully he'll be installed as the final boss of the French Open, like in Mortal Kombat.
Right.
He's the Shao Kahn mm-hmm. of the French Open.
Unless, of course, Alcatraz kicks his ass.
No. That won't happen.
No?
Nobody will kick his ass at the French Open until he's dead.
Mm.
Honestly, if you removed one leg, no one would kick his ass.
Mm.
It would be an honorable fight.
But hasn't he lost to, like, other people? He's lost to, like, Djokovic.
He's lost twice out of 120 tries.
At the French Open?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's why he's won more French Opens than anyone ever by a wide margin.
So this is but that's not the whole season. That's just
no, that's just one tournament. Open. That's what I'm saying.
So he's real good there.
He's the best beyond any, like, nobody has ever been better at a thing Rafa is at playing tennis at Roland Garros.
Have we figured out what it is? Is it the air? Is it the French air?
It's the clay.
Yeah.
It's the clay because nobody works harder than Rafa, and nobody hits a higher topspin forehand than Rafa,
mm-hmm.
and that just drives, it like breaks you down. So a good Rafa match at Roland Garros will look like that. It'll look like this. It'll be like 7-6, the other person won the first set. Holy shit, Rafa's in trouble. Then it's 6-4. Then it's 6-0, 6-0.
It's just deteriorating.
He just breaks you down.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can't fight back.
Okay.
Yeah.
He should only play on clay.
That's what I'm saying. Till he's 80 years old, he's Shao Kahn at the French Open.
Right.
Yep.
Well, I wish you a good season.
I'm excited.
Well, it's gonna look be forward to hearing a bit more about that in the coming months.
If you don't, it's not going to go well for Rafa then.
Yeah. So, Jordan, today we have an episode to go over, and we're going to go off the beaten path a tiny bit to start the new year off.
Ooh.
And we'll get down to business on what that means exactly after we say hello to some new wonks.
Ooh, that's a great idea.
So first, shamelessly star-fucking-dance transition game. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
My transition game is like break your ankles.
Yeah.
Like crossover.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm like Iverson.
You have no idea when it's coming,
right?
But it's so smooth.
Ooh, and then your ankles are broken.
And then we're off on a new topic.
Next, Ebel Xi Jinping. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
Next, Big Steve P. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
I was assured that was not Steve Pachenik's larger version or father.
Okay. I'm not convinced.
Yeah.
Next, Jordan, check out Sleep Token. Mogwai with Stank. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And it only took Baylor and Kyle 800 episodes to become policy wonks. Thank you so much. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you very much.
And we got a technocrat in the mix, Jordan.
Ooh.
And just looking at this, I can tell this is a prank. appreciate it nonetheless, but I apologize. About everything that I'm about to say.
Here we go.
Thank you so much to Gratis Pa Fodal Sadigan Britta Christinel Enflo. Thank you so much. You are now a technocrat.
I'm a policy wonk.
4 stars. Go home to your mother and tell her you're brilliant.
Someone sodomite sent me a bucket of poop.
Daddy Shark. Bom, 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 bom. Jar Jar Binks has a Caribbean black accent.
He's a loser little titty baby.
I don't want to hate black people. I renounce Jesus Christ.
Some other language.
Ah, that was a happy birthday in Swedish.
In Swedish.
Yes, you wished somebody a happy birthday.
Well, happy birthday.
Yes.
I get worried when there are longer foreign words.
Sure. No, I vet the foreign words to make sure that you are not saying something offensive.
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, I could be forgiven since I don't really know what
sure.
I'm looking at, but
naturally.
It is good that you're doing some diligence.
Hey, this is recorded. You could be forgiven in a regular conversation, but once it's recorded, then 10 years goes by. Who knows? People are throwing this out at you all the time.
I like that you did some screening of the Swedish happy birthday message,
sure.
and yet somehow Ebel Xi Jinping.
Oh no, that one's staying in.
This speaks poorly of your editorial process.
It's because you can spell it. Ebel.
Mm-hmm.
Nah, there you go. Xi
right.
Xi. That's two Xis.
Right.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, Jordan, today we are starting off the year with something that I feel like is addressing an issue with our show.
Okay.
I think we have a problem.
All right.
And that problem is embodied by the lack of Project Camelot.
You're not wrong.
I think that there was a balance, perhaps, that came in the form of Alex coverage,
mm-hmm.
and then something else that wasn't Alex.
Yes.
And I think we ruined the fun of Project Camelot.
I think Project Camelot ruined the fun of Project Camelot.
We played
Camelot.
A small role in making it so I don't feel like we should cover it
anymore.
That's fair.
That's fair.
But Carrie did a lot of it, too. Carrie Cassidy did a lot of it herself.
Groundwork is there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that is, you know, that is a piece that is no longer there. And a lot of things that I feel like we could try to do or have done in the past just don't work.
Mm.
Jim Baker had a stroke, and it's not fun to cover him anymore.
It's not fun.
It's really a bummer. A number of other shows, I don't know if they have any kind of panache or any kind of relevance
or anything. There's a certain je ne sais quoi that we require, if you will.
Yeah, and there's a, we're a podcast out of balance. It's a Koyaanisqatsi situation. You know what I mean?
Just throwing shit at you.
Yeah. You ever see Koyaanisqatsi?
I have.
You got to watch that Koyaanisqatsi. Get high, watch these little pictures of nature and cities and stuff. It's great.
It is.
What a soundtrack.
It is great.
So, anyway, I feel like we do need something, and I don't know what that something could be, but this is a possibility as an option, and this is sort of a trial balloon-ish, maybe.
Okay.
See how things feel, but it just so happened that as we were recording our last episode, Jimmy Dore had Alex Jones on as a guest.
Right.
And Jimmy is somebody who has been a possible subject of some analysis for a while. He's a figure that inhabits similar space to Alex, but also moves a little bit differently.
Sure.
And so I'd considered covering him, but there never was really a way in necessarily. But having Alex Jones on, that's a way in.
Yeah. What's the deal with Dore? Is our new show
right
that we're gonna be? What's the deal with Dore? Close the door. I like that one.
Or bolt the door.
Slam the door. Hold the door. Hold door. What happened to him? So I remember.
Yeah.
I'm living in 2009, 2011 area. Jimmy Dore is a comedian.
Yeah.
I am just starting out in stand-up, you know, and I'm listening. I'm absorbing all kinds of comedians. Jimmy Dore, average at best.
Yeah.
What happened since then?
So I wrestled with this a little bit, too. And I will say I used to like Jimmy Dore.
Yeah.
But that was a while ago.
Sure.
I initially knew of him from his appearances on the podcast Never Not Funny, where he was one of the host Jimmy Pardo's oldest friends in comedy.
Mm-hmm.
That show started in 2006, and Dore was one of the very few guests that were on the first season, along with folks like Scott Aukerman and Paul F. Tompkins, as well as Pardo's other more niche comedy friends like Pat Francis and director Pete Schwabba.
Pat, is that long for something?
Oh, boy. I don't want to get into Pat Francis right now. So Jimmy Dore was fine, and there was a fun tension when he was on the show because prior to Pardo marrying his wife, Danielle Koenig, she had dated Jimmy Dore.
Right.
He was a fine guest, and I was a big fan of the show, so at that time, pretty much anyone who was on became someone I thought was cool just by default.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was in.
Never Not Funny was, for that time period, that was where, like, so much cool shit was happening.
Yeah,
and
they were very... I wouldn't say, obviously not first, but they were really early in terms of doing a podcast like that. Jimmy and Mike Schmidt, the other co-host in the first season, were just so fucking good together.
Yeah.
And then as it grew, like, there were all the people who are now these luminaries and, like, everywhere.
Totally.
Andy Daly, Paul F. Tompkins, Scott Aukerman, like, all these folks. And it was just, it was a great fun time.
It was great.
I've fallen out of it. I have not listened to it in a while. Although, our friends, people we knew, like Joe Quazala has been on a number of times.
No shit.
Tommy Mack was just on.
Wait, still going?
Yeah.
Holy shit!
Yeah.
Oh, man, I haven't seen Pardo in fucking 10 years?
Yeah. Some other folks that we know, like Beth Stelling has been on.
Sure, and, she's great.
So it's interesting.
Yeah.
So around that period, Jimmy, it's confusing because we were just talking about Pardo.
We were just talking about a different...
Jimmy Dore began hosting his own podcast with fellow comedian Todd Glass called Comedy and Everything Else.
Right.
It was a fun type of thing, two comics with really different energies hosting a chat show together. It was fine, but it was never my favorite. And Todd Glass was clearly way funnier than Dore.
Yeah.
That needs to be said.
Yeah.
The third host of that show was Jimmy's wife, Steph Zamorano, who was there. Eventually, Todd Glass left the show, and I can't say that I checked in on it much more past
that. Yeah, never.
And kind of like, all right, this is,
why would
this
we?
Is there.
Yeah.
So Jimmy, he was always a comedian who mixed in some politics. As you can see in his hour special from 2008, Citizen Jimmy. Even back then, I didn't think the special was very good, and it fell really short of the politically minded comedy of someone like David Cross.
Yeah.
But I have to be clear that at that point, there was a political theme that was being delivered through the medium of humor. The humor was still the skeleton upon which the messaging was built, which made it perfectly palatable, even though it wasn't good.
Sure.
Or necessarily even that challenging.
Sure.
But it was fine.
Political humor has been around for quite some time.
Yeah. Some people do it more in engagingly, and some people are fine.
Listen, I'm still pulling out my old Mortsall LPs.
You love the Capitol Steps?
Love Wait, it.
Who is that? The guy at the piano?
I was actually. So, I can't remember his name, but yeah.
So then something happened.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know exactly what it was, but I do know that it had to do with a shift from him creating things that were meant to be humor that had political themes to creating things that were political content that also tried to be funny.
Ugh.
As part of this, he started a show on the Young Turks Network, which is like the incubator for people who want to eventually swing hard to the right wing. That's not entirely fair. There are a lot of great folks who work there and have worked there, but Jimmy Dore and Dave Rubin getting launched there is a tough thing to ignore.
If you're at a party, Nazi shows up, mm-hmm. and everybody goes, hey, let's no more Nazis, right? But if you're at a party and two Nazis show up, that's too many Nazis, and then everybody's hanging out with the Nazis, and then you're also the Young Turks, and Cenk is running for some shit.
Yeah.
Get out of here.
It's just looking at it from a 30,000-foot view.
Yeah.
Not thrilled with Cenk
no.
as a whole.
Nope.
Jimmy Dore and Dave nope. Rubin both getting their
that's
starts
three
there.
Strikes.
It's tough.
Yep.
So after parting ways with the Young Turks, Dore hosted his own YouTube show where he's been a real angry idiot, insisting he has left-wing positions while constantly drifting to the right and getting drawn in by very clear bad actors in the right-wing media ecosystem, befriending the Boogaloo boys.
Yeah.
Being all crazy about COVID shit.
Yeah.
Being a very staunch Putin defender in terms of Ukraine.
Is he doing this... the way that so many failed stand-up comics go around it is just like, oh, I'm not doing very well. All my funny friends are over here. And then I start kind of leaning in towards these people. And at first you're kind of taken in. And then after a little bit, you're like, well, this is my career now. This is the way I have to do things. Is he an opportunist or did he go nutso?
I think maybe a little of a column A, a little of a column B.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but that's always the case.
Yeah. And yeah. I think a lot of it probably surrounded the 2016 election.
Yeah.
He was big into Jill Stein. And
that'll happen.
There was a lot of...
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah. There's a lot of alienation from would-be type compatriots.
Sure.
Because of the insistence on, like, not voting for the lesser of two evils
right,
kind of thing.
Right, yeah.
And I think that... That was an avenue, that election, especially because of Hillary and her, you know, unpopularness with
sure.
A lot of folks who have left-wing positions.
Sure.
I think it became a fertile ground for him to start bashing Democrats real hard.
Right.
And I think you see his numbers go up considerably, and it's hard not to chase those things when you don't really have that much of, like, a firm core to what you are and what you produce.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So as we go through this, I may have some more things to say about his whole trajectory. One of the things that I wish this was the case, but I have no evidence of it.
Okay.
I wish I could say that the thing that set him off on his trajectory was when he went nuts about Kyle Cease's boot camp. Do you remember that?
Wait. Kyle Cease was the...
He was a comedian.
Yeah.
And he was...
Blonde guy, right?
Yeah, he was in, like, a couple movies.
Yeah.
And he started a comedy boot camp.
Mm-hmm.
And Jimmy made a, like, investigative work about it.
Oh, no.
And I, it's weird because, you know, it was... I do remember it being, like... All right, you're taking this a little seriously.
Mm.
But also, in hindsight, he's totally right. I mean, Like, the comedy camp was a whole scam.
Yeah, the whole, they're all scams.
Yeah, and Kyle Cease.
I'm sorry, everybody, go back to taking improv lessons. It's going to help.
Kyle Cease went from that, like, colonel,
yeah,
pivoting from, like, stand-up to motivational speaker.
Mm.
And now, like, if you go look at his YouTube channel, it is just motivational nonsense.
No! Oh, yeah. My God! Yeah. What happened to everyone?
Yeah.
Oh, I think... Ugh.
I'm not sure, but I wish I could somehow say, like, that was it. Kyle Cease's boot camp broke his brain. But I don't think that's the case.
That would make sense.
Because that was, like, in 2010 or 2011, so the timeline doesn't really make sense.
I want to ask you this question. Are we, like, is this recency bias? Because here's what I feel like. I feel like in our lifetime, the trajectories have gotten crazier. You know, like in the past, in our parents' lifetime, the trajectory of like stars and all that kind of stuff, it has a fairly consistent thing, right? Like,
what?
The trajectories of
you mean fame?
Yeah. And now it just gets fucking weird real fast.
Yeah, I think that I'm not saying this is a good thing necessarily,
sure,
but in the past there were a lot of gatekeepers. And
that's a good point.
And granted, a lot of them did abuse their gatekeeper status, but at the same time, it kept the idea of becoming famous kind of outside of the realm of, like, a rational perspective you could have.
That's a good point.
Nowadays, so much shit is so random that, like, it is not fully irrational to think, like, it just takes a coincidence or a random thing to strike.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, the trajectories are really nutty nowadays.
That is...
And it has been for a little while, but I don't think we've fully, like,
been able
acclimated.
To kind of grasp to that, yeah. No, it is fascinating, that idea of, like, yeah, why not just always have a camera on you? You might be famous.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a thing might happen, and then you'll be famous tomorrow.
Yeah, you might fall down in a really funny way, and then you're famous.
Yeah, that is such an interesting, like, reverse Johnny Carson kind of scenario, where it's like, if you make it on Carson, you're going to be huge the next day. And it's more like, God knows, fall right. You're going to be huge the next day.
And nowadays, it's like, yeah, if Carson calls you down to the carpet, it's like, you're a fucking hack.
Yes, absolutely.
Oh, the establishment approves of you. You're boring.
How dare anyone like you, loser.
Yeah. So anyway, I may have some things to say about his trajectory and shit, but ultimately, my feeling around Jimmy is that he's a person without a real center. He has anger and some demonstrably true points, like the system is corrupt.
Sure.
And because there isn't a real core to what he's about, those things combine into terrible mixtures. If you're an untethered boat, your anger about a corrupt system could easily lead you to make alliances with monsters just because they have the same surface level complaint that you do, that the system is corrupt. Mm. And I think that's how we end up here with him interviewing Alex fucking Jones.
Yeah. I would also say that's probably how we got Tokugawa.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
I mean, you're not big into Japanese history? You want to know more about the Meiji Restoration?
This might miss me a little bit. So one of the big things of Jimmy's career, one of the big moments of his political career was back in 2016 when he went to the Republican National Convention with the Young Turks. At some point, he crossed paths with Alex and Roger Stone, and Jimmy took the opportunity to spit in Alex's face.
Great.
I don't think that anyone could fault him for having the idea to do that, but following through with it is pretty stupid. And it indicates a little bit of an unfamiliarity with the kind of media space he was interacting with.
Mm-hmm.
Someone spitting on Alex is the best thing that could possibly happen to him. And naturally, Alex used it as evidence of his persecution for a long time after that. I bring this up because obviously it's kind of the elephant in the room for this interview.
Yeah.
Incidentally, it comes up right before Jimmy tries to launch into his intro for Alex being on the show.
So, I only drink what you spit in my face.
Ah! Ladies and gentlemen.
What'd you do?
You ought to do a reunion thing and show a clip of that.
Okay. All right. I will. Alex Jones is with us. He's an Austin-based producer, director, writer, and documentary filmmaker, as well as host of The Alex Jones Show, which appears on both syndicated and internet radio. He is also the founder of InfoWars, the multimedia enterprise. He has been banned by many prominent social media outlets for a range of alleged violations, although his Twitter account was recently restored. Welcome to the show, Alex Jones.
Wow, Jimmy, I've been a big fan of you for a long time. And you're one of the only men whose spit I've had in my mouth. So I just want to say that I've also had Willie Nelson spit in my mouth.
Oh, okay.
But my mouth was open when you spit at me like a spitting cobra and went right in my mouth. So you and Willie Nelson have both been in my mouth.
Alex was smoking some weed with Willie, and that's where So this is where the recording of the stream begins. So I'm not sure what the context of what they were talking about was, but I presume that it was about how they both like to drink.
Yeah, I would
assume so. I've heard. Anyway, what Alex has done here is great. He's completely illustrated dominance over Jimmy.
Ugh.
Jimmy spit in Alex's face, and Alex is laughing and joking about it. Honestly, because like I said, it was a big win for Alex's propaganda. But not only is Alex laughing about this, he's introduced an uncomfortable idea that if you think about this for even a second, is hanging over this entire interview.
Should be.
About 7 years ago, Jimmy hated Alex so much that when he saw him, he immediately spit in his face. And now Jimmy is psyched to have him on the show. So what happened? In order for Jimmy to rationalize doing this interview, he has to basically say that he was wrong about Alex and concede a whole lot of credibility in the process. The act of inviting Alex in for this interview kind of requires an embarrassing level of submission from Dore. By acknowledging that this happened and how he's happy to interview Alex, he has no leg to stand on in case they disagree with anything that ends up coming up. Oh yeah, you were wrong about me, weren't you?
Yeah.
He is so weak from the jump.
I can't imagine doing that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I personally don't know why this is true for me, and I guess not everybody, but to me, like, spit means we fight and then one of us is in the hospital, you
right,
know, like
right.
there's no well, like, you spit on my face and then we walk away and then later meet up.
It's
right.
Well, it is, you know, an assault.
I mean, it's, you grew up in Missouri. Nobody, yeah. If you get spit on in the face in Missouri, one of you dies, right? Like, that's the rule.
I only have one experience of this.
Yeah.
And it was at a party. Me and Nikki Gifts were at a party.
Uh-huh.
And I think I did something to him or something. He knocked a beer out of my hand.
Yeah.
And then I spit in his face and then he punched me.
Yeah.
And then, like, we were like, everything's fine.
Yeah, that
we got
makes
another
sense.
Drink.
That
yeah.
makes sense. Yeah.
He's like, hey, we got a little out of pocket,
spit,
little out of hand.
Blood, we all move on.
Yeah.
That's how it works, right? You can't. It's
something that is not. And I, in the moment, did not think I was fairly drunk. So
sure.
I didn't think of it as, like, oh, he's probably going to punch me if I
do
this.
Right.
But yeah, it happened. And it seemed like a very logical chain of events.
No, in retrospect, you're like, yes, I spit in your face. You punched me. We both know where we stand.
Yeah. And in hindsight, I was like, I probably would never do that if I didn't know the person.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Yeah.
Even though that's kind of counterintuitive.
It doesn't
But if, like,
sense.
If it was a stranger, it wouldn't have been one punch.
No. That would have been. Yeah,
yeah. We wouldn't have made up pretty quickly afterwards.
No.
But yeah, it's so strange, too, like. Imagine that you know who Alex Jones is and do that.
Yeah.
Like, I kind of would understand it from the standpoint of somebody who's been, like, directly harmed by Alex.
Sure.
I would certainly give a little bit more leeway in that sense.
Sure.
But Jimmy's another media figure. He hasn't been wronged by Alex.
Yeah.
He just doesn't like him.
Yeah.
And to not have the awareness of how, like, propaganda games work and what Alex wants out of you is ridiculous.
Yeah.
It strains credulity almost to imagine he didn't know that was something that Alex would like him to do.
It is very, I think that's also another part of it that is so confusing to me, is that idea of, like, you are performing an action and that it is almost like creating a fictional scenario for both of you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's performing that action no longer existing in the space of I'm a human and you're a human, and instead existing in a space of, like, how are people going to see this?
Mm-hmm.
Me spitting on this man, you know?
Right.
And he has the appearance of that, too.
And it was on the set of where the Young Turks were broadcasting from the RNC.
Right.
So there's an awareness that there's cameras all over the place.
Yeah.
So there is a performance aspect to it. But I'm not necessarily convinced that it's not just, like, Jimmy's that fucking stupid.
Yeesh.
And kind of an angry person. So I think that I can't really suss out whether it's just kind of a total unawareness of the community and the type of people that he's interacting with, or if it's some kind of calculated move that we're both putting on a performance of a fight.
Yeah.
I'm not sure.
That is so fascinating to me, just because, yeah, I mean, like, I'm an angry person. Mm-hmm. That's
you yelled in the courtroom, sure, or outside the courtroom, sure, when Alex was doing his interview, but that was kind of trying to disrupt in some way, and you stopped.
Yeah.
You didn't spit on him.
I mean, it was stupid.
Yeah.
But I mean, that's kind of like the thing that I'm thinking about is, to me, there's such a very strict and simple line between violence and not violence, right?
Right. Like, if yelling is on the right side of the line.
We all yell. Yeah. You want to make jokes? You want to be mean? Fine. We all do that stuff.
In some states, you could be prosecuted for spitting on
somebody. Absolutely. And I mean, now that we know about disease and shit,
sure,
you know, back in the day, spitting on somebody didn't mean much because you didn't understand.
This is pre-COVID.
Yeah.
So Alex has asked, let's play this. Let's have a reunion, baby.
Mm, wow.
And so Jimmy plays the clip of the altercation at the RNC.
Oh, that's fun.
I stand by that you were being funny. Because you were being funny, you said to Jake Uger, "I'm trying to be nice," and that was funny to me. And let's just show it. Here, I'll show it. What happened? Here it is.
No, Jake, relax.
Hold on. Where did Saudi Arabia, you dumbass? We talk about that all the time.
Anti-liberal, and you're pissed.
Bullshit.
We're being nice here.
You know what I care about? I care about the American people.
Good. You're the one flipping out. Anybody hurt? I'm being nice. I'm not lying.
Get the fuck off my stage. Great stuff.
So that there was the iced tea incident, and the ironic thing is that I thought this was going to blow up into a huge fight, fist fight, because Cenk Uygur was out of his mind, and you had baited him.
You spit on a man
and professionally,
and other
you got
people
exactly. I couldn't believe he was handling it that way.
He's a brawler,
and you know he likes
Cenk's a brawler.
He likes to say he's a brawler, but it did diffuse almost immediately after that. Like everybody kind of walked away from that.
This is a really sleazy kind of way to present the situation, as if he was spitting on Alex to defuse a tense situation.
I mean, I'm not saying I am a hero. I'm just saying that by performing this action of spitting on a man, I saved everyone's lives.
Right. Yeah. Could have gotten way out of hand.
Yeah. If I were on the plane on 9/11, I think I'd
spit. If I had nice tea, would have gone down.
Yep.
So Jimmy is right, though, that Alex baited Cenk into that response. Alex was hoping to antagonize someone with a sizable audience into a fight so they could turn that into the news, you know?
That would have been fun.
I have no problem with that characterization that Jimmy's making, you know, that Alex and Roger went over to the Young Turks filming area in order to prompt a confrontation. But I take serious issue with the way that he's talking here, because you know who is really baited by Alex? Jimmy's dumbass.
Yeah.
He's trying to act like it was Cenk that took the bait and fell for Alex's trolling tricks, but he spit in his fucking face. I get why he's playing it this way, though. Jimmy has absolutely nothing to gain from the world that Cenk inhabits. Young Turks audience members aren't going to be his audience members now, so it's totally safe to throw Cenk under the bus while trying to play cool with his new right-wing bigot friend. It's all very transparent, though, and it's a really weak beginning to this exchange.
Yeah, I can already see like 10 different reasons that I would have said no to doing this before it even came up. Like, not me, but me as Jimmy Dore.
Yeah,
with that history.
But you have to consider how attractive it is, the idea of so many eyes, so much attention you're going to get out of interviewing Alex. And here's the thing.
Yeah.
I think that there is the potential for an interesting interview between them.
Sure.
I think that there is the potential for, hey, I am a extreme far right Christian nationalist racist fuckhead,
mm-hmm,
and I believe these things. You are somebody who's claiming that you're kind of on the left, scream about Medicare for all sometimes.
Sure.
You also have some of these beliefs.
Sure.
What is it that makes us different?
Right.
That could be an interesting kind of exchange. But in reality, all this turns into is fairly similar territory that Alex has said on all the other interviews that he does, because he's not doing an interview. He's using this to poach Jimmy's audience.
Yeah.
This is what this is about.
Yeah, I just see that, like, if I'm Jimmy, this comes back to my like life philosophy. Is like, it just take the L sometimes. Your life is going to be better if you take the L. You know what? You don't get to have Alex on your show. It would be nice, But you spat in his face, and now from that moment on, any interaction you have with Alex is to his benefit more than it is to yours.
Right.
Take the L. Just take the L.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Like, it makes sense to me.
There isn't that much to gain out of this.
Yeah.
Other than kind of solidifying yourself in the pointlessly contrarian community of shitheads.
And solidifying yourself as a toad that they can exploit.
Yeah. Yeah, it's wormish.
So if you want to be a worm, then I guess that's what you want to do.
I guess so.
Or you could take an L and not be a worm. I don't know. Whatever.
Yeah, less money in that.
Yep.
So Alex tells the story of their altercation, because I guess we're just obsessing about this at the beginning.
Sure, why not?
And it was a huge parking garage that they'd sealed up with big air conditioners in July. And so we were all milling around. I walked by, said hi to them. I've been on the show a few times. They said, yeah, maybe we'll have you on later. And I came back by, and they were on break, so I went up there and gave him a Bill Clinton's a rapist T-shirt, and he just completely blew up when
Thank
he saw Roger Stone walking by and said, Roger, you're not going to crash my show. And so then I thought it was all a joke, and then he got madder and madder and madder and madder, and then he went on air basically and said, we're here in our studio, and he got into the building and basically acted like I had like a James Bond snuck in. Instead, it was out in the middle with other shows 15 feet away, booths everywhere. You guys had a big stage. So that's the truth of that story, and it was a lot of fun.
So, you obviously you didn't sneak into the building because there was security letting everyone in. You had to go through security to get in, and of course you couldn't sneak in with a camera crew. And we had seen you. I'd seen you walking back and forth earlier that day, and so we knew you were there. I didn't know that somebody had invited you onto that stage. I know you had been on Cenk's show before. He had interviewed you at least a couple of times that I saw. So I didn't know that was going to happen.
Does Jimmy not think that him spitting in Alex's face wasn't the thing that happened?
Bleh.
I mean, sure, Cenk yelled at Alex and Roger, but Jimmy debatably committed a crime. I think it's totally cool to sit around and joke about how Cenk overreacted, and literally anyone except Jimmy could conceivably engage in that behavior.
Mm.
Seeing as he overreacted way more than Cenk, this just makes him seem like an obsequious worm.
Yeah.
Because that's what he is.
Yeah.
This is pathetic.
Yeah. Yeah. I just, you know, that's going to be unresolved for me in a way that I don't think I can quite handle.
Mm.
That, like, you can't spit on somebody and then only talk it out after that. You know, to me, it's like, that's another level. You know what I mean?
No, I have to go a step further. They are not talking it out.
Right.
They are not.
You can't even do this. Yeah.
They are making fun of Cenk and ignoring the fact that Jimmy spit in his face.
Yeah.
I mean, they're talking about it, but they're not talking about why he did it. What he's learned since then.
Yeah.
What was the reflection about the act of spitting on him? He just is like, hey, it stopped the fight. Cenk sure was mad, huh? What are you doing?
That is stupid. Also,
But this is what I was talking about at the beginning. Getting into any of that stuff really is threatening.
Totally.
You can't get into that stuff because then it becomes like, oh, what else have you been like wildly wrong about to the point of spitting in someone's face?
Yeah, yeah.
What kind of credibility do you have? What reliability do you have as a person who has perspectives?
Yeah.
Probably little.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, the other thing that stuck out to me was whenever he was like, yeah, I thought it was a lot of fun, and everybody laughed.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of made it clear to me that they didn't understand that it was fun in the moment.
Yeah.
Like, getting spit on for Alex...
It was great.
...was awesome.
It was perfect.
Yeah. Really, when he's describing it, you can definitely be like, oh, yeah, they had a lot more fun back then. They did.
Yeah.
The present sucks for Alex. That back then, they were doing all kinds of fun shit.
Yeah, like getting spit on.
Spit on. That's the being the rock star conservative guy you want to be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, I don't recognize the unawareness. Like, or I don't understand the unawareness of, like, people like Alex want you to hurt them.
Insane.
They take that, like, consequences are virtue for them.
Yeah.
So if you punch him, it's great.
Yeah.
Like, the guy who poured coffee on him was the best thing that ever happened to him.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I did these people not have, like, those inciting campus preachers when they went to school?
I guess not. That's another good question. There's so many things about people when they react. It's like, Maybe you just haven't, you know, you're like Dodo, but you're just slightly naive, you know? You didn't know that the Spanish might fucking shoot your brains out, you know? Like, that could happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's what leads to this.
And there we are.
So, Jimmy tells a little anecdote about something that happened after the spitting incident. Mm.
The crazy thing to me was that I went to play Austin, Texas. My first time I was playing Austin, and I was eating at that steakhouse across from the Westin. And swear to God,
got a message
you
from
came
God.
In and you were seated right behind me. And I was like, oh, my God, Alex Jones is going to kill me. Because you could. You're much bigger than me. And you could crush me. But
hey, I thought it was funny. I love your comedy. I love your show. You're going to get in trouble for this. Okay. But I'm a big fan. So is my wife.
Oh, my God.
Every episode, which is a lot. And so, no, I think you're one of the best political brains out there. And you're fair.
Whoa.
You're exposing the whole political system as rotten, controlled by big corporations like BlackRock, who are now starting World War III. And you've really the whole time stood up for my free speech. And I appreciate that. You got it a little wrong, what happened with the whole school shooting thing and what I really said and what I didn't say.
I don't want to even say the name of it, but
if that comes up, I can tell you what really happened there. That was all PR firms.
Okay. So first of all, Alex absolutely doesn't watch Jimmy's show. He has very good instincts about this stuff, though, and he knows that Jimmy's never going to push back on this because it would require doing something that works against his ego. Alex is using some of the old tricks that Steve Pachenik taught him, where you overwhelm an idiot with flattery and then they're yours.
Oh, my God.
Also, Jimmy clearly has no idea about how any of the games he's involved in work. Alex would never have beat him up at that steakhouse. If anything, Alex would have bought his dinner as thanks for all the attention he was able to farm off Jimmy spitting on him.
Please spit on me again! Hey, listen. It's so good to see you. Remember the spitting incident. How about we do something next week? I'll get you onto the phone. You can spit on me there. That's immediately. Yeah.
But now Alex has buttered Jimmy up, flattered him excessively, and now he's going to use it to lie about Sandy Hook. Jimmy now finds himself in territory he should have known he'd end up in. Alex is going to straight up lie to his audience about his actions in the legal case, and Jimmy is essentially powerless to do anything. Alex has already asserted his dominance with the spitting talk, which clearly illustrates that Jimmy has to have been way wrong about Alex in the past, which in turn gives credence to the idea that Jimmy's also wrong about what Alex did in terms of Sandy Hook. Further, Alex has set him up into a box where pushing back on Alex's shit threatens to take away the praise that's being shoveled onto him. Alex said Jimmy was the best political brain out there, and Alex is the talk of the town now that he's back on Twitter. Jimmy doesn't want to risk losing feeling that approval by doing his job and pushing back on this stuff. Essentially, within a minute or two of the interview starting, Jimmy is fucked. Alex is going to steamroll this and use Jimmy's platform to siphon off audience members, and Jimmy's essentially running an infomercial for InfoWars at this point, whether he knows it or not.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't understand that at all. Like, of all the things, of all the things that I will buy from that is, like, how many years have you in show business now?
Yeah.
30-something?
Uh-huh.
And you're getting overtaken by that weak shit?
Yeah, and it's like, all right, great.
Come on.
The media lies, and the system's corrupt.
Fine.
You're talking to Alex Jones.
Right. And you're sniveling.
Yes.
You're sniveling for Alex Jones.
Great.
Oh, you've had at least one agent in your life go, oh, I think you're the smartest, funniest person, and then you've learned from that.
You'd hope. Well, but here's the problem.
Yeah.
If you actually think you are the smartest, funniest person,
my God, yeah.
Then it doesn't set off those alarm bells.
That is a good point. Yeah. I mean, yeah, the moment Alex said those words, I was like, if I'm talking to Alex, I am shutting off the... I'm like, okay, you're full of shit. Click.
Yeah.
Like, no, absolutely not. Oh, yeah, I think my wife and I think you're hilarious.
We watch your show every day.
The fuck you do. Click.
Get the fuck out of here. So, Jimmy, he starts a little confrontational, but not in a good way.
No.
I can tell you what really happened there. That was all PR firms taking one thing out of context, blowing it up years later as a way to try to take me off the air.
Okay, so, yeah, well, I do actually want to talk about that, but first I want to show this. You were on with Tucker Carlson, and he said this. Oh, wait, what happened?
When you got deplatformed, and to this day, no one has ever been more aggressively censored, I don't think, than you. I've apologized to you this in person before. I was in Labrador on a fishing trip and missed the entire thing. I was literally out of cell range. I didn't know what happened, but I got back, and I read about it. I felt like it was a major moment in the history of the American media. I don't think anybody defended you when that happened. Anybody with any kind of audience,
performing when Tim Cook.
So I just want to correct the record on that. And I actually did defend you the day it happened and ever since.
Oh, my God. So, yeah, it's right out of the box. Nice little confrontation of, hey, why didn't you shout me out on Tucker?
So our first bit of information is, I am shocked you would bring up the most famous thing we did together, spitting on you.
Sure.
The thing that I do have planned is another way for me to be obsequious towards you.
Yes.
Cool.
Yeah.
So you came in hot making me obsequious, but before you did that, you wasted your time.
You had no idea.
I had obsequiousness in my holster, buddy.
Yeah, but yeah. It's obsequiousness mixed with, hey, man, you were on a big platform.
Yeah,
you could have put my name out there.
Don't you know how the game works?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
I've been defending you, but also there's a little work around here, and that is that Tucker said nobody with an audience.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Oh, Jimmy.
No, poor Jimmy.
Oh, Jimmy.
So Jimmy plays a clip of himself from 2018 where he's defending Alex as evidence that he stood up for Alex back then.
Wow.
Which, if you recall, as this started, one of the first things Alex said is, you defended me.
Yep.
So that's already been
already
kind of understood. Alex accepted it. The only gripe here is that he didn't shout him out on Tucker.
Yeah.
Because I'll tell you the biggest fake news story of my lifetime.
Just really quick. I had started the clip of him from 2018 in the middle because it's super long.
Oh, God. Thank God.
Was Iraq possesses weapons of mass destruction. That was the biggest fake news propaganda story in the history of my life. Should the Washington Post be deplatformed then because they posted fake news? You know, we just did a story a few weeks ago on the Jimmy Dore Show. Facebook took down a newspaper's Facebook page because the newspaper for the 4th of July posted the Declaration of Independence. And they took it down because of hate speech inside the Declaration of Independence. That's a fact. That happened.
Is that?
And they had only posted the first half of the Declaration of Independence. And their Facebook page got a strike or temporary ban. And then they were afraid to post the second half because it might happen again.
Oh, man.
There's nudity in the second
half. So that's the world we're living in right now. The antidote to bad speech is not suppression of that speech. The antidote to bad speech is more speech.
That's been debunked, Jimmy.
So I just want to let everybody know that I'm sure Tucker didn't know, but I did defend you, and I defended I defended free speech and the First Amendment.
All right, case point.
Solved.
So yeah, earlier in that clip, he does specifically say that Alex shouldn't have been kicked off stuff. But like I said, it's a really long clip.
Great.
And I don't care.
No, we're not doing that.
Thinking that the antidote to bad speech is more speech is very stupid. The reality is that whether Jimmy understands it consciously or not, on some level, he knows that he's playing the same game as Alex, and he's afraid that he's going to be kicked off stuff. He's not making a principled stance as much as he is making a stance based on self-preservation.
Mm.
Jimmy has bought the bullshit line that Alex's bans were the result of him covering fake news, and Jimmy kind of knows that he does that too, which is why he's worried and has a personal stake and investment in defending Alex.
Right.
From free speech.
Right.
Just take what Jimmy was ranting about in that clip where he's defending Alex as an example.
Mm.
First of all, he brings up the WMDs and Iraq news coverage and then points the finger at the Washington Post. I'm sure they had some iffy coverage back then, but wasn't the New York Times a much bigger culprit?
We're all famously mad at the New York Times.
Shouldn't he be pointing the finger at, like, Judith Miller or something?
Yeah, right? It's like it was there.
Yeah. More importantly, Jimmy covers a story about a newspaper getting a strike on Facebook because they posted the Declaration of Independence, which is apparently hate speech. This is an InfoWars-style narrative, and you can easily see Alex covering this as proof that the globalists are trying to destroy the country. That's right at home at InfoWars.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Skim a headline and rant about
right
it.
Right on, yeah.
But Jimmy has the story wrong. This is about a paper called the Liberty County Vindicator out of Liberty, Texas.
All right, that's a...
It's a threatening-sounding name, but they are a normal paper.
Okay.
Founded in 1887.
Okay.
On the 4th of July, 2018, they decided to post the Declaration of Independence in small chunks on Facebook, and the post that got flagged was the 10th post in the series,
mm-hmm.
which included paragraphs 27 through 31. we all love the part of the Declaration that says stuff like, we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal.
They're great.
That's the good shit.
Not the...
There's
but
more.
We're still going to keep slaves.
Well, and there's more in there, like the list of grievances against King George.
Oh, they were pretty pissed off at King George.
Paragraph 29, which was included in the flagged post, is part of that grievance list and says, quote, he has excited domestic insurrections among us and has endeavored to bring on the inhabitants of our frontiers, the merciless Indian savages, whose known rule of warfare is an undistinguished destruction of all ages, sexes, and conditions. Facebook was clear that this post was flagged by an automated response and that it was an accident, and then the post was restored.
Or Facebook was unclear that, sure, the Declaration of Independence was racist.
Oh, boy.
What do you want?
The newspaper got a nice apology from Facebook, and everything was fine. It's obvious why this could get flagged out of context, and it's a non-issue. Or at least it is for everyone except people who operate like Alex and Jimmy fucking Dore. It would be fair enough to ask how these automated actions pick up what they do and question the possible inconsistencies in moderation practices, but that's not what Jimmy's doing. He's playing the exact same games that Alex does with blurring details of stories so he can use them for his narrative purposes.
Yeah.
They're very similar, but Alex is just better at the game.
Yeah, that is something that can never be stated enough, because it will never be stated regularly, which is that, like, for all this talk about what the Founding Fathers, blah, 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 it's important to remember that in the Declaration of Independence was a promise of genocide towards Native Americans.
I don't know if it was a promise, an implication. Yeah.
The country was founded with an intent to kill everyone, just to be clear.
So, I think Alex is a decent read of vibes.
Yeah, yeah,
and
yeah.
He can tell that Jimmy's a bit needy.
I'm the winner. I'm the cock of the walk.
But maybe you need to pacify and placate the neediness a little bit.
Sure.
And
sure.
So Alex does that here, and mm-hmm. then decides, like, I'm just going to do whatever I want in this interview.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And
by the way, Jimmy, if I can respond to that,
yeah,
that's a great point. You notice we didn't talk before this interview.
No,
this is unscripted. I remembered, so I didn't even know you were going to play that clip. I didn't know out of the gates. That's the first thing I brought up was I appreciate that you were one of the few people up front that saw what was happening. They were exaggerating what I said out of context, demonizing me so that everybody else would accept me being taken off air. So they then had the prototype to get everybody else taken off air. And it later came out in government documents in the Wall Street Journal that indeed they chose me as a colorful, flamboyant person to get the public to accept that as basically training wheels. To get everybody on board. But you hit the nail on the head. I've never killed anybody.
What?
Madeleine Albright tripled the sanctions on Iraq, as if it wasn't bad enough what George Herbert Walker Bush did, and killed several million people. She was in the middle of office, Secretary of State.
Kick her off Twitter.
Yeah.
60 Minutes, Leslie Stahl. A million people have died, 500,000 are children. Is that a good price to pay for what you did? She said, yeah, it's a good price to pay. We're proud of it. You know, basically, we do it again. Okay, she's lauded and worshipped. And then they knew they were lying about WMDs. And you get Colin Powell up there with the anthrax and all of that garbage they knew wasn't true. And so they've killed millions of people. But then I am set up in civilization and society as the worst person who's ever existed, because I agree with a couple callers calling in once saying, yeah, probably is fake. And they literally cobble that together, have a PR firm. I wasn't deplatformed for that. They needed something afterwards because it made me a martyr, what you predicted. So they dredged up this earlier stuff, exaggerated it times 100, then defaulted me in court cases when I gave them all the stuff. There was no case. The judges found me guilty and then told juries that I was worth $400 million when I was actually broken upside down last year. And now it's finally come out in court and my bankruptcy that I was upside down when the judge says, you're not broke, you're a liar, and your lawyers can't put on any evidence.
Oh, boy. So you can really tell that Alex wants to talk about the Sandy Hook thing. He's interjecting his talking points about it in a way that's very forced, and that's because that's his main goal. He wants to go on shows like this to gather new audience members, and one of the biggest hurdles that he has working against him is that people associate him with his actions about Sandy Hook. His primary mission is to force his version of reality into these spaces to combat the reality of what he did. I guess this is the more speech thing that Jimmy is so fond of. Also, let's not lose sight of what's happened so far in this interview. They ruminated for a while about how Jimmy spit on Alex, and then Jimmy launched into a needy-ass presentation about how Alex didn't name-check him on Tucker when they were talking about people defending Alex when he got deplatformed. If I'm listening to this or watching this, I'm seeing Jimmy as a very weak person. He's coming off very desperate, sucking up to Alex, pretending spitting on him was all in good fun, and letting Alex ramble on about whatever he wants. He doesn't come off as much of a host.
Mm-mm.
Jimmy is also learning in real time why interviewing Alex is a stupid idea. The whole thing was a two-minute barrage of lies that he's not equipped to deal with, so he's just going to let this stand. The entire characterization of the Sandy Hook case is a fraud, and Alex can't produce these government documents that are about choosing him to set the precedent for kicking people off air. This is what happens when you interview Alex unprepared. You'll let him lie to your audience, and then you'll sit there powerless to even really respond to the thousand tidbits of bullshit that he's throwing at you. So it's just a barrage, and you aren't equipped. You just can't handle it.
Yeah.
And you don't want to handle it. Jimmy doesn't want to handle it.
No,
he wants
no.
to promote Alex.
No, absolutely. I was thinking about this, and I don't like it because it's self-promoting. So I would like to take us as who we are out of it. You know, like, I don't care if it's the two of us.
Right.
Right? But Alex's narrative, if it is not counteracted and overwhelmed by our narrative, will win. Because it is
true.
With the complicity of the media's laziness that narrative will overtake the reality of it.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason, and what is facilitating that, is that Alex has realized that there will be no consequences for continuing to lie about Sandy Hook.
Yeah.
So the whole trial was a complete waste of everybody's time.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully when everybody gets the money, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
But the point is, he is still going to be allowed to lie about Sandy Hook for as long as he lives
fun. I think the most obvious indication of that was him lying about what Scarlett Lewis and Neil Heslin did in the courtroom.
Yep.
How she was crying and saying that her lawyers had misled her and stuff like that. It's fucking bullshit.
Yep.
The ability to lie about a case as it was ongoing, there's never going to be consequences for him. And he knows it.
And there's not going to be follow-up. He can go on Tucker and say that he's actually the hero of Sandy Hook and no one will do anything about it.
I am the victim simultaneously.
Yeah, absolutely. So that is kind of the problem here for me is like, unless there is a concerted effort to overtake Alex,
mm-hmm.
Alex will control the narrative of Sandy Hook.
At least in some spaces, yes.
I mean, for now, but I think long term, Alex's narrative wins. Alex's narrative, the legend wins over the truth time.
I believe you're correct about that.
That's what I'm saying, now.
The amount of people who are not necessarily InfoWars people who buy into the bullshit that he, predicted 9/11 perfectly.
Yep.
Like, that should give people pause about how easy it is for incredulous people to take in bullshit. Narratives that Alex spins.
So it is from that I want to be clear, because I think it can come off like ego for the two of us to be
sure.
like, oh, you shouldn't cover Alex Jones.
Right.
But it should be very, very clear at this point that you shouldn't cover Alex Jones.
Well, if you do, you should take it more seriously than a lot of people do.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
And I think that Jimmy isn't in that camp. He's
absolutely not.
He is a coworker with Alex.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
this isn't ever meant to be a confrontational of actual interview.
They're at the water cooler talking about sports.
I was thinking about it while I was listening to this too. I was thinking about what I would do if I did interview Alex.
Mm-hmm.
And granted, that'll never happen. Mm-hmm. But if I did, the only thing I would do is I'd be like, all right, look, I think you're a piece of shit. And we're not going to agree or disagree on anything.
Yeah.
Because we have fundamentally different worldviews. All I want to do is nail down the stuff about what you think your place in Christian history is.
Yeah.
Like, let's talk about the fact that you're a prophet. Let's talk about the fact that God chose you to fight the devil. Does the Bible need to be rewritten?
Yeah.
Do we need to add books to the Bible?
The whole thing.
Like, that's all I would do.
Yeah.
And I would just demand, no, we're not going off track.
No interest
don't
in...
Don't care.
Don't care about politics. Don't care... Oh, what did Madeline... Don't give a fuck.
Don't care about
we're
how
focusing.
Wronged you were by the Sandy Hook courts.
This is what we're doing.
We're just talking about whether or not there needs to be a new Christianity.
Yeah.
Because you are such a huge part of this.
If it's not in the Bible, then how can people know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah,
don't you want your gospel to be told?
Yeah.
So that's what I would do, because I think that would be a really uncomfortable position for him to be.
Yeah.
Maybe not, though. Anyway, Jimmy tries to steer things back on track because Alex is launching off into a Sandy Hook shit. Mm-hmm. And so he wants to know, what were the misrepresentations that were told about you to get you kicked off social media? Now as we know, Alex None. Thinks that it wasn't, you know, it's not the Sandy Hook stuff that got him kicked off social media. That came later to retroactively justify getting him kicked off.
Right.
So that shouldn't be what he talks
about. It was
Hillary. That shouldn't be what he talks about, but instead it is.
Oh, great.
And so tell me the misrepresentation of what of your positions that got you banned.
When I was able to co-host a show for 2.5 hours a couple weeks ago with Elon Musk on Spaces, that just the main show had 20 million views, over 100 million views, the clips, biggest Spaces that Elon's ever done. I hear we're going to do another one soon.
Congrats.
He was told by Tucker privately and others, hey, Alex was not deplatformed for Sandy Hook. He thought that. And he said on the air, he goes, no, I went to the log and I noticed it was for confronting Oliver Darcy, who had been taking my sponsors and getting me kicked off things and bragging about it. So I saw him in D.C. going in a committee hearing that they were talking about me at later. And I confronted him and said, man, you're an anti-American person. Well, they called that bullying. And that was the final strike that took me off of Twitter at the time. And so then it only made me bigger for a while. And so they now bragged about it once they won these court cases by rigging them. A PR firm put out press releases when they won the Connecticut case, the second one in November of last year, 2022. That'd be 2 years ago, or you know, 2 years back. And I didn't know what happened until later. So, yeah, Sandy Hook happens. It's real. I think it happened. It's a terrible tragedy. School shootings, you know, are real. A bunch of academics and people start looking at anomalies. It becomes this huge internet thing, hundreds of millions of views on YouTube. Other people covering it, the professors in Florida and Wisconsin and a school safety guy and a bunch of people. And it turned out some of the things they said were true. Some weren't. Turns out a couple of them are probably schizophrenic. And I simply covered it on a few shows, had callers call in. What they put in evidence was 22 minutes over 6 years. It was 6 years after it, 7 years after it, they sued me. I hadn't talked about it when they sued me for over 2 years, barely ever talked about it, but they cherry picked it. The PR firm put the clips out, ran it right as I was being deplatformed in 2018. Suddenly, it's like they were invading a country. The propaganda was in sometimes every newspaper, almost every day, Nightline, or that's already gone, PBS, CNN, every show. Ted Koppel did chime in on other shows, but it wasn't Nightline.
Koppel.
Dan Rather, all of them come out against me. I mean, Old Guard, they had 60-minute shows about it. They had NBC Dateline shows about it. And they said, he's currently going to their houses. He's currently sending people to their houses. He's currently urinating on graves. None of that ever was put in court. No one ever did any of that anyways. And so then they sue me for years to get all these depositions. We give them all the discovery. There's nothing there. And they go, you didn't give us everything. You're defaulted. So now we're going to have a trial on damages, but you're already guilty. And then the judges in both places wouldn't let us. They had my phone because we gave them the phones. When they go, oh, they actually gave us his phone. No, no, no. We'd given them all my phones. The real reason the lawyers got sanctioned is with the phones, they accidentally just gave them all raw, and they gave them some of the Sandy Hook medical records from those depositions. So the lawyers did mess up, but they already had the phones. So I'd given them all the phones. How am I not giving them all my text messages, all my emails are getting defaulted, and then they have from my lawyers a whole phone? Okay? And so this is the type of crap.
So to be clear, Jimmy asked Alex what positions of his were misrepresented to get him kicked off social media. The beginning of Alex's answer includes him saying that he was kicked off Twitter because he was inciting harassment against Oliver Darcy, and then it deteriorates into a completely fictional retelling of Sandy Hook stuff. Alex really wants to get his fake version of the story out there, and Jimmy doesn't know shit, so he can't say with any kind of...
Oh, I mean, no, I don't blame Alex at all.
No.
Alex is doing 100% the right thing because Alex's
it's
mind,
the wrong thing, but it's the right thing for him strategically.
No, I mean, for him, Alex is a terrible person who's a piece of shit, who has done horrible things and who the literal country has sanctioned for it. But because of the way that human beings work as long as he pushes this story,
yeah,
his legacy will be intact.
And he hits the same beats over and over again in all of these interviews in order to print the legend, as you say.
Yeah, he will go down in history so long as he is allowed to continue doing this as the man who correctly predicted 9/11 and as a prophet.
Or at least there will be a considerable number of people who buy into that.
Yeah.
Whether or not history remembers him that way, it won't be something that...
Colloquial history will remember him that way, even if written history...
Patriot history.
Yeah, lore is set.
So now, as somebody who was involved in the Texas case, I can say with a high level of certainty that much of the stuff Alex is saying is false. He had not cooperated with discovery, and the phone was literal proof of it. He very well may have given the phone to his lawyer, but they withheld it from discovery, which is the problem. The reason the phone and the text were so important was because he was supposed to turn over every text and email that had specific search terms, like the plaintiffs' names and Sandy Hook. Alex and his lawyers insisted they had turned over everything, but then Alex's lawyer accidentally sent plaintiff's lawyer Mark Bankston copies of all of Alex's messages, along with confidential medical information about the Sandy Hook plaintiffs.
F. Andino Reynal, former Obama cabinet.
In those text messages, there were undisclosed messages that include the specified terms, which was proof positive that there were messages that were relevant to the case that had been intentionally withheld from the plaintiffs. This was long past the point where Alex was defaulted, and this was in the damages trial, but it was a really damning blow in terms of Alex trying to pretend that he'd cooperated with the process. Legitimately, the only argument he could make is that his lawyers engaged in malpractice and went against his wishes by not cooperating with discovery. Like, he turned everything over, but then the lawyers he was paying decided not to turn over damning stuff. And then his lawyers also made him send incompetent, unprepared InfoWars employees to testify in depositions as corporate representatives. He's not making that accusation, and there's a pretty obvious reason why.
Oh, yeah?
Now, in terms of the rest of this, it's just his standard fraudulent retelling of the case. None of this is true. The whole story of the PR firm is bullshit, and Alex can't substantiate this, even when Elon directly asked him for the name of the firm.
Yeah.
Alex cites experts that he relied on to cover Sandy Hook, and it's professors in Florida and Wisconsin, school safety experts, all sorts of people. The professor in Florida is James Tracy, the one in Wisconsin's Jim Fetzer, and the safety expert is Wolfgang Halbig. This was his crew that he used to create the pretense that there was more credibility to the idea that Sandy Hook was a false flag. He knew then that they were crazy. He just didn't give a shit because they were useful. I would be very curious to know what things they said that he still thinks are true because he just told Jimmy that.
Yep.
And I think if he was specific about it, he'd get sued again.
I mean, no, he wouldn't. Why?
He could.
Why?
Could.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, but it's a little bit like, you know, why?
Alex claims...
Do it. I mean, all we're doing is making fucking Norm Pattis rich at this point.
Well, whether... you know, I get what you're saying, but the reason that Alex isn't specific is because of that.
Yeah. No, I understand.
So he also claims that he hadn't talked about Sandy Hook for 2 years when they sued him, but that's just absolutely false. He and Owen Scheuer did coverage saying that Neil Heslin was lying on Megyn Kelly's show when he said that he'd held his son's dead body, and that wasn't 2 years before he got sued.
It's almost like there was a physical clip of that that was played.
Jimmy Dore has no idea about the reality of any of this, so this kind of blatant lie is allowed to stand unchallenged. All of this is a lie, and because Jimmy is incompetent and wants to be cool with Alex, he's just letting the audience be exposed to this with no pushback. It's a pathetic relinquishing of any responsibility for the information that you are tacitly or explicitly endorsing to your audience.
Mm-hmm.
It's fucking bullshit.
Yep. Yeah.
So Alex insists he gave over all the phones.
All of it.
And this leads to a pretty uncomfortable reality.
Hmm.
So I'm like, yeah, my lawyers messed up and did that. I got it. Nothing to hide. I'm like, here's my 3 phones in the last 7 years. I kept them, take all the things off. And the best they got was my wife taking a dick pic of me that I never took a dick pic. And I'm like, look at that. I go, oh my God, my wife goes, remember that time you were asleep? I took a picture. And so they have a picture of my ding dong. So that's the type of weirdness that goes on. Then the PR firms, after they won, came out and said, and they got bought by the biggest PR firm in the country right after that, that they were already big out of New York.
Who were they?
And they, I forget the exact name. If you want, I'll Google
it. It's not the ones that try to do Rogan, is it? The scumbag Midas Touch, Misles Brothers. That's the ones who got that thing going at Rogan.
Who is that
N-word guy? Spotify controversy because he mentioned ivermectin. That's those guys.
Yeah, I don't want to get into inside baseball because Joe's asked me not to, but let's just say you're hot.
Fuck off.
Yeah. So that other voice is Kurt Metzger, who's more or less Jimmy's co-host.
That's Metzger?
Yeah, he's...
Holy shit, what happened to Kurt Metzger?
Well, he got in some hot water about...
God damn it! He actually was funny 15 years ago or something.
There were comedy pieces... There were bits of his that I enjoyed.
There was actual talent there.
Also, Alex should probably be really upset that Kurt Metzger's there because he worked on the Borat show.
That makes sense.
The This Is America that Alex was so furious about.
Oh, my God.
Kurt Metzger was one of the writers for that. But now let's just ignore that.
Oh, God.
So I can't comment on Alex's dick pic. But I will say that he's lying.
Yeah.
Very much.
Oh, no. That was self-taken, I believe.
No comment. So I don't know if that's the worst thing on the phone. Probably the worst thing was Millie Weaver texting Alex on March 1st, 2020 and saying, quote, "I went and hung out with the Groypers at a bar last night to find out some info about them. An intoxicated leader in their group close to Nick, Fuentes, told me, yes, Fuentes is anti-Semitic and most of them are." Alex replied, quote, "It's a trap for sure." 2 days later, Alex texted Millie an article from Paul Joseph Watson's site attacking Sebastian Gorka as the leader of Conservative Inc., and he said, please tweet this out.
Mm-hmm.
At the time, Nick Fuentes was in a heated feud with Gorka, and this was clearly an attempt to bolster Nick's side, and Millie saw through that. She told Alex, quote, "I'm not promoting Nick Fuentes' attack Conservative Inc. talking points." Alex replied, quote, "I get playing nice, but Gorka's bad news." Millie then said, quote, "Gorka is a stick-up ass, but that's beside the point. Fuentes created his army of Groypers, Goyim Gripers, to destroy what he calls Conservative Inc. He's creating terms. I'm not falling into the trap of using his terms. It only benefits the Democrats to get conservatives infighting. Groypers also hate Israel and use Trump's support for Israel to drive people away from Trump. And yes, Nick is an anti-Semite." Anyway, the point is that Alex clearly knew what Nick was all about before cozying up to him and giving him a giant platform.
Sure.
I'd be more worried about that than a dick pic. Now, here we see someone ask Alex again for the name of the PR firm. And what do you know? He still doesn't remember it.
Odd.
These people have supposedly hijacked 5 years of his life and dragged him through costly and humiliating court cases, but he has no idea who they are. Sounds believable. So Kurt Metzger asks him if it's the same people who tried to attack Rogan with that stuff about him being racist. Firstly, this is funny because Alex is taking credit for spreading around the video of Rogan saying racist shit, like how a theater full of black people was like the Planet of the Apes. Back when Rogan wasn't going to let Alex back on the show, Alex declared a holy war on him, and Alex started airing these clips on InfoWars around that time.
Yeah.
One of the founders of Midas Touch said in an interview with Barstool Sports that they got the clips that they posted from Alex airing them.
Mm-hmm.
But Metzger has given Alex a name that he hopes is the right one, so Alex does the most coward shit possible and says, "You're hot." The noncommittal answer works perfectly here because Metzger will hear that as a yes, which gets Alex off the hook with, because he doesn't have a name. On the flip side, because he's not technically saying yes, he doesn't have to worry about getting sued for very clear defamation. It wasn't Midas Touch that Alex is talking about since they didn't exist until 2020.
I mean,
this is ridiculous.
But
here's this super funny dynamic where Metzger's mad at something that Midas Touch did, but Alex actually did.
Yeah.
And Alex should be mad at Metzger because he wrote for Borat. It's like these people should be so mad at each other, but they're advantageous to each other, so they just ignore that
this
shit.
This is what I'm talking about. All the way back at the beginning. Bring it full circle. Trajectories seem weirder now.
Mm.
They just seem so much weirder.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm. I don't know. I guess downward is a trajectory.
Yeah.
So Alex goes on a bit of a coke rant here about how he's been vindicated by bankruptcy.
That sounds right.
And we know a three-letter agency used law firms. The top Democrat law firms in the country ran this. Law firms, PR firms, but it was the Justice Department. Listen to this. In my bankruptcy, and they were done up to send an email. This is a year ago. The Justice Department sent an email to my famous bankruptcy lawyer here, well-known, super respected, done some of the biggest bankruptcies in the country for like chemical giants.
Prestigious.
And says, Mr. Jones will not be afforded the bankruptcy system. This is a hurdle he will not get across. And then the Justice Department came into the case, and when I'm in these depositions, they have 1 to 2 federal agents in the room hoping to find something. And I've been so transparent, so real, all the bookkeeping checked out, everything was true. Remember all the headlines? Alex Jones has got secret accounts. Alex Jones has offshore accounts. Alex Jones has hundreds of millions of dollars. You can go to Bloomberg. I was actually covering it today. You can go to the Connecticut News. Alex Jones is broke, sold his car and his guns and his, you know, basically wife's jewelry. Tank. I am $3 million in the hole right now. You can read them. Here's the headline. Alex Jones is broke and selling his stuff. Here's how he got there. Bloomberg. Alex Jones gets green light to sell his guns and cars. Bloomberg. They now admit that I'm $3 million in the hole. So again, I have under penalty of perjury all this. So now they flipped from, oh, we were wrong. He didn't hide $400 million to, oh, sorry. Oh, they also sued my dad, my mom, my family. Dad spent his whole savings, who was a dentist for 49 years. My dad has no money, can't even pay his property taxes. My dad spent $1.5 million in the last couple, and they think it's funny. They think it's funny claiming my dad had hidden money. I know I'm ranting. I'm going to shut up now.
So, and the reason why, so I had said that, well, first they come for Alex Jones, and then they're going to come for us. If you're doing independent news and you're speaking against the wars, they're going to come for us. And so that's why you have to stand up right now. And of course, nobody at the Young Turks will ever go against the wars. They're always for the wars.
Oh, my God. So, again, none of this is real. Alex absolutely has money hidden around in various trusts and accounts.
I mean, yeah, that's absurd.
The Department of Justice didn't intervene in his bankruptcy the way he's saying, and no one sued his dad. Mm-mm. Alex is claiming that they sued his dad because his dad is one of the owners of PQPR, one of the shell companies that's used by InfoWars to sell supplements. He was likely interviewed about this, and Alex is blowing it all out of proportion because he can tell these idiots are buying his story.
Yep.
And the same is true of his mom. I don't remember if it's PQPR or PJR Trust or whatever, one of those other ones. His mom is like a most owner of one of those, too.
Yeah.
But after all of that, that whole entire woe is me rant, Jimmy still needs to come in and stress that he defended Alex to the Young Turks. It's just insane. These two deserve each other.
Yeah. Yeah. It is fun because we've seen a bunch of different examples of conflict with Alex in this one kind of episode here, right? So we've got the initial conflict, we got the spitting and how that was stupid,
mm-hmm.
right? Then we've got the next conflict, which is man versus how much man can lick another man's butthole. Mm-hmm. I believe that's a classic, you know, man versus nature and so mm-hmm. on. Then you've got your conflict with Alex where you'd be like, here, if we're going to talk, the conflict that makes sense is just focusing on this thing, mm-hmm. right? And it really feels like there's no conflict with Alex that makes sense.
No. And I, the reason that I would choose the one that I would choose is because you kind of have to just give up on anything meaning anything.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're going to talk to him.
No, it is fascinating.
He's all full of shit. And the only way to have any kind of conversation is entirely on his turf, but just explore that turf.
Yeah, it is fascinating because I think Alex has truly reduced conversation down to the Marshall.
Mm.
You know, like there is only physical conversation with Alex. There can never be any kind of auditory or mental exchange that will affect his behaviors.
True. There can be conversation, but it doesn't matter.
Right. Well, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm not saying like, oh, we should fight him. I'm just saying that because it's fascinating because he has done this.
Right. And the evidence of no use in fighting him comes also from this with Jimmy spinning on him. It plays into his propaganda games.
Yeah.
There is no upside to engagement with him, honestly.
He's a black hole. He's truly a black hole that creates gravity and sucks it into nothingness.
Yep.
Wow.
So, look, Alex is realizing again Jimmy's still being fucking needy, mm-hmm. and he needs some kind of placation. So he decides we should probably resolve this whole thing about the Tucker.
Sure.
You know how you defended me.
You did it. Yeah. You're a good boy.
So, yeah, you were big back at the time you defended me. You were big.
Oh, my
You're
God.
Gigantic now. So
oh,
it's
my
kind of
God.
Fair what Tucker said is no huge show defended Jones. No
Wrong. I'll fight him. I'll fight him right now. I'll fucking fight him right now.
It went from you, and then it immediately went to journalists, and then it went to leading journalists, then it went to the leading doctors and scientists in their field, and then it went to the former president of the United States. They banned everybody. So it wasn't just Alex Jones. They banned anybody and everybody, including anybody who had any counter-narrative to the establishment narrative around war, around COVID, around lockdowns, around January 6th around anything. Anybody who had anything to say that the CIA, the FBI, and the establishment didn't want them to say, they banned, they censored, and they discredited. And I've firsthand have knowledge of that.
You know what? The one of the first bullshit testing on who we can like do this to was Gamergate. There's people that work in real journalism that to this day still bring that up like that was a real thing. And it was the exact same kind of bullshit. I had the whole media do it to me for a week.
Mm-hmm. Well, there we go. Now we know why Kurt's here.
Tweeting at me. Then he got me too'd later, that piece of shit. Yeah. Hilarious.
We also know why Kurt's here.
Yep.
Yep.
So you might notice that the list of things that Jimmy thinks people get banned from social media for having counter narratives to the establishment, it's mostly really understandable stuff, and you can kind of see why platforms wouldn't want people spreading misinformation about them on their sites.
Yeah.
When Jimmy says about war, he's not talking about something like the Iraq war. He's talking about people supporting Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Misinformation about COVID led to incalculable number of unnecessary infections and deaths. January 6th was people storming the Capitol and trying to overthrow the government, so it makes sense that a site wouldn't want people celebrating that or lying about it on the platform. But here's the thing. You could do all that stuff and not get banned.
Yeah.
There may be some cases of individuals who've gotten the boot from one side to the other because of their actions, but swing through social media, you'll find plenty of support for Russia's war effort, plenty of COVID denialism, and plenty of people saying January 6th was good.
Mm-hmm.
When your actions around these topics might jeopardize the site's ability to sell ads, then you might get in trouble. But that's less about censoring your dangerous opinions and more about money being more important than principles, which shouldn't be a foreign territory for Jimmy. Also, what Kurt Metzger is talking about is his pretty unhinged series of posts on Facebook defending a guy named Aaron Glazer, who had been accused of sexual assault and rape by a number of women, which led to him being banned from performing at the UCB theater. It wasn't that he was arrested or locked up without any investigation or evidence. It was that a theater chose not to associate him with him over the allegations. That really pissed Metzger off, so he posted a bunch of dumb shit online about it, to the point where his boss, Amy Schumer, had to come out and denounce his actions. She made some comments about the situation when she was interviewed by Charlie Rose, which is why Metzger is projecting his anger onto Rose instead of Schumer, who presumably could still aid his career in some way.
Hmm.
So that's what's going on with him.
That makes
and
sense.
That is probably a big part of the answer of why he's here.
I was going to say, it is fascinating, that kind of like Dark Mirror version of a point of view on Gamergate. Is like, the rational view is like, oh, Gamergate is the like proto version of what we see play out over and over and over again online now.
Sure.
And the irrational view is like, Gamergate wasn't even real, man. That's why we see keep playing out over and over and over again. It's like, that's an interesting, your insane way to view things, but it is interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Rock on, Kurt.
Yeah, good luck, buddy.
So Jimmy asks, why did they need to take you down, man?
That is a good question. Why did they need it?
Right. And so Alex has a source on this.
Mm.
So do you think the reason why they went after you so hard and had to take you down, they had to do all this nefarious stuff, twist your words to take you down, was so that they could set a precedent, so they knew what was coming, so they knew that they were going to want to censor anybody and everybody, and so they had to have somebody to start with, and that's what that was?
I actually know this, and I always forget the name of the article because I don't usually subscribe to stuff, but I had to get behind a paywall to find it. About 6 months before I got deplatformed in August of 2018, when Tim Cook literally held a powwow meeting, he admitted and decided to curate me, and they wouldn't even say why. And then they gave some fake reasons later, not Sandy Hook. I remember 6 months before that, I don't remember the exact Wall Street Journal headline, but there was another article about it called "Hold on to your tinfoil hat, Alex Jones." I think it was like Gizmodo. "Hold on to your tinfoil hat, Alex Jones. You're about to be taken off the air." And then it was a synopsis of the Wall Street Journal. This Wall Street Journal article was one of those articles for the corporate elite.
Mm.
And so it was like 25 pages long. I go subscribe to it, and I forget the exact headline. And it was NATO meeting with the tech heads in Europe and meeting with News Corp.
Wow.
Don't take that tone with me, Jimmy.
That was Kurt.
okay, fine. When News Corp splits and sells its entertainment division, we're still going to be popular. So this was to the shareholders of News Corp through the Wall Street Journal that they actually also own on the news division when it split. And I'm reading this 20-something page article, and it says, soon the internet will be like cable TV. I think they use Netflix as an example. You'll have 1,000 channels maybe, but that'll be it. We're not going to let people go to all these old sites and alternative sites. And we're going to do it by going after Assange. When the left doesn't stand up for him and the journalists don't, we'll have the left. then we're demonizing Alex Jones. He's a horrible person. When we then take him off the air and the right wing doesn't stand up because they don't want to be next, then when we take off the next person, the next person, the next person, it's human nature. No one will stand up, and we'll take them all, liberals and conservatives. And it's I've got to find that article again.
Yeah, man, he should really find that article. Oh, sounds important.
Oh, my God.
So I love the way that this started with Jimmy asking that question. Like, he was basically restating Alex's entire premise and then just turning it into a question.
Yeah.
He was, like, saying, could you please ramble some more about this?
Yeah, it's good for, like, increasing your word count on an eighth grade hamburger essay, but maybe not if you're a professional.
It doesn't really get anywhere.
No.
So that article that Alex is talking about, the one with the headline, "Hold on to your tinfoil hat, Alex Jones, YouTube is coming for you," wasn't about Alex getting kicked off YouTube. It was about YouTube announcing a plan to address misinformation, where they would put a label on conspiracy content to distinguish it from actual news.
Almost like community notes.
Kind of.
Yeah.
At the time, they were also planning to add labels to channels that were state-run outlets, but that wasn't really relevant to the Alex part. This wasn't directly about Alex, but his name was in the headline because he was the most high-profile example of an online shithead who'd been really successful in gaming algorithms to boost his content while pretending to be a news show.
And a solid clickbait headline.
Mm-hmm. That article actually links to the Wall Street Journal article that Alex is mentioning, and the headline of that one is YouTube takes aim at conspiracies propaganda, with the subheadline, quote, Google unit to provide more context around some videos. You may be surprised to learn that it's not 25 pages long, it's more like 1.5. You might be further surprised to learn that literally all of the details Alex is rattling off are not in that article, and he's making it all up. It's pretty easy to elicit wows from idiots when you just make sensational shit up, which is what's happening here.
Yeah.
The article is just about YouTube making changes to its search function to prioritize credible outlets, particularly in the breaking news category. There's nothing in it about NATO or News Corp or anything about the internet being like Netflix. There's nothing about Assange or attempts to capture the left and right. This is all just Alex's fantasy, and because Kurt and Jimmy are idiots, they're just letting Alex spout this off as if it's backed up by a real document. They're in pretty far over their heads, but they don't realize it, and I think they don't care. I think they like it.
I that tone of voice for the pronunciation of wow is reserved for the fucking Grand Canyon and the Aurora Borealis and not a goddamn word that comes out of Alex's mouth. How dare you?
It's easy to it's easy to blow minds when you make stuff up and demand that everyone take you at your word.
Ugh.
It's pretty simple.
It is like
for critical thinkers, this is sad.
For how much we've done this, it is still surprising to me that this shit works.
Yeah.
Still.
Yep.
Because time is supposed to change things. And if you move forward in time, generally speaking, things become more familiar.
Mm-hmm.
And yet somehow.
Well, I think.
Brand new.
I think that on some level, people in the space that Jimmy exists in don't care or know a lot about the reality of Alex.
Period.
So they know about, like, hey, this guy gets a lot of attention. He seems to have similar vibes to us about, like, not liking the establishment.
Yeah.
Let's talk to him. Let's not figure out what he actually says. And then he thinks that God gave him a mission and he's fighting the literal devil. Isn't Jimmy supposed to be a big atheist?
You would think. You would think.
Weird.
I mean, and again, I think it returns back to the, like, removing things down to the Marshall. He's removed content. You know, like, when people get Alex Jones, you are not interested in listening to the show.
No.
You're not interested in hearing what Alex has to say. You don't believe Alex will have another prediction like 9/11, even if you like him. The whole thing is a perception and a way of communicating with people who aren't Alex that you're cool.
It's signaling.
It is
virtue in some ways.
Amazing.
So Alex continues to lie about this Wall Street Journal article, and
naturally,
then Jimmy asks a brilliant follow-up.
Okay.
But it was a 20-something page battle diagram, so I go on air with it, and I say, I'm about to be taken off, because that was a high-level article, not for pop culture, but for real business people to invest in News Corp when they split their entertainment division, and they explained, we're going to end freedom on the internet, and we're going to use this punk to do it. So it wasn't that I was that important. I was big, sure, and I was populist, and they fear that, and I was uncontrolled. But they chose me because I did do clownish stuff a lot, and I still do. I have fun. I'm on the air 4 hours a day. And so I was just chosen as patient zero along with Julian Assange. It was me and Julian is who was in the article, and it's very cold-blooded. So, yes, they admit that I was the first domino.
And the feds tried to take your cat, right? Were you able to keep him?
It's actually true. My wife, the cat's like 4 years old now. We got for my now 6 year old daughter. She wanted a cat. The other cat we love so much had snuck out of the house and got down the street and got run over.
I don't believe it. So you can see the hosting chops on Jimmy Dore here. Alex just spouted minutes worth of bullshit about this 27-page Wall Street Journal battle plan to destroy free speech on the internet involving NATO and CIA operatives. And Jimmy's follow-up is about the feds wanting to take Alex's cat in his bankruptcy. Jimmy's a big free speech guy. Shouldn't he be super curious about this article? Shouldn't he want all the details about it, if real? Like, if it was real, this is a smoking gun kind of thing. It seems like the only reason someone in his position wouldn't pursue this line of questioning further is if he knew damn well that what Alex is saying is bullshit and that any further examination of it would reveal that. Whereas, if you just don't reveal that, works pretty well. Works pretty well for your anti-system kind of presentation.
Yeah.
It's very suspicious.
Yeah, that is a question along the lines of like, and now after this information on the war in Iraq, cats, are they having a good day today? We'll be back. Yeah.
That cat thing was media bait that Alex's wife posted on Twitter. Yeah. She made a video of Alex holding his cat saying the Department of Justice wanted to take his cat. But the reality is just that he listed his cat in his rundown of personal possessions. So any questioning about the cat's value was just them going down that list and, you know, asking about the items that were on it. No one is going to seize his cat, but this is a fun narrative for Jimmy to throw out. Low stakes, and has the vibe of creating the image of tyrannical oppression and paints Alex as a woe-is-me victim in the whole thing, which is pretty much what Jimmy seems to want, which is great.
Which, to me, it seems like there's the simplest conversation to have with Alex about that. The real question, I think, would actually prejudice people against Alex better than any of his other beliefs, which is just, Alex, you listed your cat as a physical monetary item. So is it alive or is it just cash to you? Because I would never in a million years put either Fanny or Jake on a goddamn list
as a possession.
Valuing them?
Yeah.
As what? What value do you put a monetary value on your cat?
Sure.
That's nuts to me.
It is. And then also the fact that he's like, it costs about $2,000.
Yeah.
That's an expensive cat.
All number of things are crazy about this.
That's a very expensive cat.
Too much?
Yeah.
Everything about this is nuts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm going to skip around a little bit here because there's clips like he talks about how all of his family was in the CIA and shit and all they're involved in Iran-Contra and stuff. And then tells a story about a family member who got recruited and all this, but doesn't mention that it's his dad, which is weird. He doesn't specify that it's his dad.
Smartest boy in Texas.
But he just retells that story, and it's exhausting.
Right.
And so we get to some actual, like, meat on bones, and Jimmy is a big pro-Russia guy, which is couched in anti-war stuff.
Wild.
So he asks Alex about the Ukraine situation, and here's what Alex gives him.
What do you say to this? What have you told your viewers about Ukraine?
Well, I've told them the exact same thing you've said because it's the truth. If you go back to 9 years ago, the Victoria Nuland got caught on a release tape. She didn't deny it.
Yeah.
The ambassador to the EU saying, "Screw the EU, screw what they want. We're going to basically start, you know, a war." And then 7 years ago, a few years after that overthrow and that coup, where they attacked the government, killed all the police, and, you know, burned down buildings and installed their new leader that was, you know, more anti-Russia. They then had a CNN report with Fareed Zakaria where George Soros went on there and bragged that he got $5 billion from the State Department and had done the coup a few years before. And then U.S. troops and advisors began to come into the country.
$5 million is so
cheap. And trained Ukrainian death squads. Because, you know, the country split between Slavic and kind of Germanic groups, and that was a split in World War II, but it's still where Russia was founded 1,000 years ago and is mainly Slavic. But Europe's been pushing the Russians for hundreds of years basically back towards the Russian border. And so they began to attack those 99% Russian areas, and Putin kept saying, stop doing it, stop doing it, stop doing it. And he said, if you try to bring them into NATO, I'm going to take Crimea, which he then did a few years later, And he said, I'm going to take the Donbass regions and Donetsk and some of those other areas there on the western border.
Forcibly take is also
Russia
known
as a security
as?
Zone. And so it was a provocation by NATO. I'm not defending Russia. Bad. I'm not a Russia file.
No.
But I have studied the history of it. And then I knew that's how I was able to predict in October 2 years ago, plus before the Russians went in February, that there would be a war in that area that Putin would go in by February if he was going to, because that was the intel I got from people I know in the military whose sons were over there already training Ukrainians, and they knew it was coming. And so when the Russians lied and said, we're not going to invade a few weeks before, and the Reuters reporter confronted the State Department CIA guy and said, you're Alex Jones now, claiming the Russians are going to do a false flag and invade or whatever. But I was saying, no, the Russians are going to go in.
That's exactly the opposite of what he was saying. So leaving aside the immense levels of bullshit that Alex is spewing, just towing the Putin narrative line about the war, this is a disgraceful attempt on Alex's part to rewrite his own history and coverage of the war. First things first, Alex said very specifically that Russia was not going to go into Ukraine. He said that in the days before the invasion started because he was trying to run cover against all the people who said that Putin was going to invade. Alex watched an entire speech Putin gave on air and said that Putin just wanted Ukraine and Russia to get along and do business together. He wasn't trying to fight. When Putin lied and said he wasn't going in, Alex defended it and said that the people who claimed he was going to invade were evil globalists trying to stir up war.
Yep.
Then the war actually started, and Alex said that it was just going to be in the Donbass region, that Putin was only interested in defending those states that he was recognizing as independent. Alex said this because it was what Putin said he was doing, despite everyone warning that it was absolutely not what the plan was. And then the war was really kicking off. Alex said that the Ukrainian military and Zelensky were on Putin's payroll and the whole thing was a charade. Russia would come in and the Ukrainian military would surrender immediately and then it would all be over in 48 hours. All of this is a fraudulent retelling of his coverage, meant to retroactively make himself look like a brilliant analyst of world affairs. Alex has to lie about his past statements in order to make people think that they should take what he's saying in the present seriously. If you fall for this, like Jimmy and Kurt clearly are, you're a mark. And if you allow Alex to present this unchallenged on your show, you're essentially lending your credibility that you've built with your audience to Alex to make the audience think that they should look at him as a brilliant analyst.
Yep.
And that prediction that he had in that October was mostly about China, not really about Russia invading Ukraine.
Boy. Oh, boy. Yeah, but I mean, at least if China does invade Taiwan, we won't have to deal with that being a problem either, you know?
Sure.
Alex definitely won't claim that he had credit on everything.
Well, he predicted that too.
Yeah,
he predicts everything. So we get off this topic and get into a little bit more gossipy shitting on Bill Maher type news.
Sure. I mean, that's always fun. I'm glad that has no ideology anymore. Sure. I'm glad we could all just agree Bill Maher's a piece of shit.
So here we go with that.
Now, I used to be a big fan of Bill Maher's, and yeah. So Bill Maher recently said that, now it's been clear to me since I started doing this show that Bill Maher is ignorant on purpose, right? Either he's mind controlled,
so
or he's ignorant on purpose, because it's just so obvious.
Again, that's interesting.
If I have access to this information, a guy who works at HBO with $1 million staff, he also has access to this information, and he's either mind controlled or. So listen to what Roseanne asked him this question. This is very interesting.
No wonder I don't remember this.
No shit, you blocked it out, MK Ultra.
Who's that?
Bill Maher doesn't know who's that. And I don't think that's a joke. I think he's. Do you mean Martin Luther King Ultra? Is that what he thinks? It's unbelievable. Can you believe he pretends not
was
to
that
know
a
what
joke?
MK Ultra is? Or do you think he really doesn't know? Or do you think he's actually a victim of it?
So I think Jimmy is actually suggesting that he's mind controlled. Which is fun.
Yeah.
But I think maybe you're having a bad interview with Roseanne and you make a bad joke to fuck with her a little bit or to deflect or whatever. And now Jimmy's making a bad joke about your bad joke.
Yeah. Yeah, this is dark.
Using it to imply that Bill Maher is mind-controlled MK Ultra. It's a little much.
It is a visceral and like perfect metaphorical version of humor swirling down the drain.
Yeah.
You know, like it is that start with a bad joke, the turd just keeps spinning around the bowl, and then it's Jimmy Dore.
taking it seriously. Like, it means something. Like, he's mind controlled.
Oh, my God.
So a little more on Bill Maher here.
Yeah, okay.
He also said he doesn't know who Klaus Schwab is, I think, in the same interview.
Yes, here. Yeah. Yeah. Here, let me play it. Here it is.
Shut up,
Kurt. Mind control program you're under, Bill. Yeah.
So who's Klaus Schwab?
The head of the WEF.
What's that?
This is mind blowing to me. He doesn't know who the people are. He doesn't know what MK.
Yuval Harari on. So the Igor of Klaus Schwab.
So not long ago, Bill had on someone named Bella Thorne on his podcast, and she was offended because he mocked her pronouns. So who the fuck is Bella Thorne? She's a 26-year-old actress who, unlike Klaus Schwab, the WEF, MK Ultra, that's someone who Bill actually has heard of. So he's heard of some no-name actress nobody's ever heard of, but he's never heard of MK Ultra, WEF, or Klaus Schwab. Boy, he is the smartest guy in the room, as long as the room is filled with dumb shit libs. Am I right?
Well, that's right. And now he's trying to act like he's more populist because he knows people are waking up. Look, he's not stupid.
Wait, so he's not gone patriot then? Because I think Alex had not too long ago said that Bill Maher come out as a patriot. And he was on the good side.
I'm so tired.
Shifting allegiances.
I'm so tired.
I think that maybe it was a glib question. I think sure. I would not be surprised if Bill Maher maybe wasn't in the front of his mind knowing who Klaus Schwab is. And I think that what's going on here is that Jimmy and Kurt and Alex live in a world that is freakishly obsessed with Klaus Schwab.
Yeah.
And conspiracies around him, much like they used to be with Soros.
Yeah.
And maybe people who don't live inside that bubble, maybe they don't know who Klaus Schwab is because they're not worried about being made to eat the bugs. They haven't heard the parody song covers of Klaus Schwab. This is, it's a world that they live in that is full of shit,
yeah.
And they're so surprised that other people don't share that reality with them. And,
yeah.
And maybe I would bet that Bill Maher knows what the World Economic Forum is, or has at least heard of it, but maybe the initials don't immediately strike him.
Sure. I'm trying to think of, like, pre this show. Mm-hmm. You know, we were both fairly politically aware.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I would have a reason to be aware of Klaus Schwab name-wise. Mm-hmm. If somebody was going to, pre the show, if somebody was like, oh, the World Economic Forum, I'd be like, okay, cool. And it'd be the head of the World Economic Forum. And I'd be like, who's that? And they'd be like, Klaus Schwab. And I'd be like, gotcha. Now I know the name of the position of the thing I know.
Now, it's interesting you bring that up because Alex never brought up Klaus Schwab until like 2020 either.
Yeah.
So he didn't have any...
So weird.
Yeah.
So weird.
It's just that he is the great boogeyman villain of this season of conspiracy culture.
Ugh.
And these people engage in that, and that's where they get their attention from, that's where they get their money from. And so Klaus Schwab is, anybody who's not heard of him is a lunatic.
Yeah.
Or maybe they're under mind control.
Yeah, he's the most evil guy in the room unless he's around a bunch of shit libs, am I right? I was a professional comedian for a while. That's how hard it is.
Now, the reality is that Bill Maher is playing dumb. Mm. And Alex explains it.
Mm. I don't believe, no, he's playing dumb because he knows these are the things you don't talk about.
I mean, come on. If the WEF and Klaus Schwab were real, I'm sure Bill Maher would have heard about it.
I don't believe
what is funny about that.
Way, Jimmy,
no, everyone stop.
Just 10 years ago, they would have New York Times articles saying Alex Jones feverishly was having a schizoid event in Virginia outside a hotel conference center, imagining there were men with sunglasses and helicopters. Meanwhile, the King of Spain's there, the head of the Defense Department, Henry Kissinger, world leaders. They had Marines on top of the building with State Department security, literal black helicopters we got video of. Okay, it's in my film Endgame and others. And then the New York Times reviewed a film I was in called The New World Order and said it did not exist. Now, by then, the Bilderberg Group was set up after World War II between what was left of the Nazis and the UK and America to kind of reconstitute Europe and the Marshall Plan. Their own documents been released by the Congressional Records Office. This is an
Why
official
they
group, but they wouldn't
Good
cover
question.
It. And they would say it wasn't real, even though the Bilderberg Group, as of 15 years ago, went public, started putting out press releases about who would be there, but that it's secret. Okay?
Okay. People didn't say the Bilderberg Group didn't exist. They just said the people like Alex and his predecessors, like outright Nazi Big Jim Tucker and noted lunatic Westbrook Pregler, were just kind of making shit up about what the group was.
Right.
The group operates under Chatham House rules, where there's an understanding of privacy, which allows participants to speak freely without the worry that things that they say will end up in the press. Tons of organizations use this setup because if you didn't, you'd essentially never be able to have any kind of meeting between people in high-stakes positions that led to any actual conversations. It's not always... doesn't always mean that they're planning the end of the world.
Right. You know how a lot of people are pissed off and they're like, I hate it whenever I listen to these people talk and they never cut through the bullshit. And it's like, well, but yeah, I mean, if you weren't listening, they would probably be able
to. If there was an expectation of privacy, there's a lot of less,
kind of how that works.
Less manicured speech, perhaps.
Yeah.
Because of this privacy structure to their meetings, people like Jim Tucker and Alex and Daniel Estulin were able to create whatever image they wanted about what went on there. It was a place where privacy was respected, so they were free to fill in the blanks with whatever worked for their purposes. People weren't saying that the group didn't exist. They were criticizing this lazy propaganda strategy that these folks were using. Also, no one was saying that Alex was losing his mind in that hotel because he said there was a group of global leaders happening there. They were making fun of him because he got all worked up and paranoid about how the globalists had pulled the fire alarm at his hotel to smoke him out and to make sure that he couldn't do his interview on Coast to Coast AM.
Ah, that was fun.
People were mocking his desperate grab for attention and his intense paranoia. But it's much better to present it this way.
Yeah. It was fun whenever he had to go outside, though, and do that little interview.
Yeah. The globalists are trying to stop me from talking to George Norrie.
Yeah, it was fun. Yeah. That was fun. I'll give him that one.
Yeah. So Alex has a little tidbit about Bilderberg here that should give you pause for trusting him.
All right.
So the Bilderbergs had a meeting in Washington, D.C. It was maybe a year or two ago, and Max Blumenthal from the Gray Zone went and covered it, and that's how I know for sure it's for a real thing. And he documented the people who were there and the people who were coming in and out.
Yeah, they meet 3 years in 3 years in a row in Europe, and then every fourth year they meet in Chantilly, Virginia, at this they meet at like 5-star places. This place is nice. I've stayed there before they got in there. Uh-huh. It's like a 4-star giant conference center, surrounded by defense contractors, Raytheon and Lockheed Martin. I mean, literally, it's a conference center with a golf course so they can play golf, because they play golf the fourth day.
Oh, they play golf.
They play golf the fourth day, like God.
Mm-hmm. So you can get the sense of how well Alex knows his subject here by how he whiffs on a really basic piece of information. He says they meet in Europe 3 years, and then every fourth year Bilderberg is in Chantilly, Virginia, and that is not true. Of their 69 meetings, held since 1954, four have been in Chantilly. Alex has just decided that this is the pattern that the Bilderberg group keeps because it was true for a short period of time back when he spent more time covering them, so it's just burned into his memory. The only stretch of time where this pattern holds is that in 2008 they were in Chantilly, then Greece, Spain, Switzerland, then back to Chantilly in 2012. At that point, they were a huge part of Alex's conspiracy world, so did that 3 years in Europe, then back to Chantilly? That must be their entire routine, as opposed to just the stretch when he was actually paying attention to them and covering them more before he got lost in other sorts of conspiracy shit. Trump became such a big thing.
Right.
A lot of Soros stuff, and now Klaus Schwab and the WEF.
So it's actually once every 12.25 years that they go to Chantilly, Virginia.
But not technically, but yeah, if you did the math, yeah. But it doesn't hold...
we're not going to do it. Hey, listen, guys. Sorry, we're at the 12.25 year one, so right. We got to meet in... Yeah.
Nope. Alex is just... it is interesting that he takes his subjective experience and then makes it objective.
Yeah.
You know, this 4-year stretch, this was the pattern that happened, and therefore I extrapolate that out to that is their rules. Yeah. This is how they work.
It is fun whenever it turns into like a thing that he believes is real, you know? Like, he made a sandcastle and then took it away from the beach and was like, no, you don't understand. This is a real castle. Mm-hmm. This is a real castle that I'm talking to you about right now. And you're like, no, it's just sand, man.
Yeah.
You got to stop. Mm. You got to go home.
You should.
Yeah.
So, Jimmy has a complaint about Mark Zuckerberg.
Mm-hmm.
And I should say it's an old complaint.
Yeah.
He's reading off a 7-year-old article here.
Good stuff.
But it's really just a launching pad.
Oh.
The new mafia, Silicon Valley, the WEF, the military industrial complex. Well, look at this story. Mark Zuckerberg says Facebook of the future will be powered by telepathic thoughts. Facebook users, and this is according to him, Facebook users in the future will share telepathic thoughts and feelings to each other, Mark Zuckerberg claims. You're going to just be able to capture a thought, what you're thinking or feeling in kind of its ideal and perfect form in your head, and be able to share that with the world in a format they can get that. He called on people to think less in nations, but as a citizen of a global community using innovations and technology for progress. This sounds like exactly what every person who was deemed a conspiracy theorist. Here it is. Here's the head of Silicon Valley, the head of Facebook, Instagram, the billionaire himself, Mark Zuckerberg, saying, hey, don't think of just like, you know, you remember that movie Network, where Ned Beatty gives that speech where he says, countries, there are only companies in the international transfer of dollars, and you have upset the natural order of the transfer of dollars, and you must atone. That's what he's saying right there. He's giving the Ned Beatty speech. He's saying, there are no countries, there are only companies.
You have meddled with the tidal forces of nature.
I hate both of these guys so much. All three.
Yeah. Oh, I forgot Kurt's there. Kurt, shut up.
There on your little bitty 18-inch screen, and you talk about nations and borders and peoples. There are no nations. There are no borders. There are no peoples. There are only, and that's actually the globalist speech. You know, I've actually been in boardrooms similar to that, and those are off-record meetings, when they were trying to get me to join News Corp and trying to get me 15 years ago to go to Fox, and meetings like, listen, this is all over. It's a corporate global system, Alex. You'll have more in effect joining us. Come work with us.
Is Jimmy upset about the global community thing or the telepathy thing? Because if it's a telepathy thing, he should tell the audience that was something Zuckerberg said in 2016. It is definitely not coming.
Yeah.
Also, it would be good to maybe contextualize this point by bringing up that Elon Musk wants to put chips in people's heads that allow them to telepathically communicate with their devices. But he's good. He's cool.
Yeah.
So if it's the global community thing, what's the point of the telepathy part of the story? You could find 100 other instances of someone like Zuckerberg saying that we live in a global community. I think this may have just been an excuse to talk about network, because all of these ding-dongs are obsessed with thinking they're Howard Beale.
They just love that shit.
They think that's them.
Oh, I'm the one taking the stand. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
Also,
all memorize that speech.
Seriously, I'm fine with that. It's a great speech. But if you're thinking about it and being like, oh, look at how great that speech was, like, think about that speech is about 50, 60 years old now.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing has changed since that speech. Maybe that speech didn't mean fuck all, even if you did love it so much.
Well, now you're just giving up.
I'm not giving up. I'm saying maybe don't do a goddamn Howard Beale speech like you're the coolest dude ever who's fighting a revolution.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I find it hollow.
Yeah, just a little bit.
So Elon Musk also wants to put chips in people's brains.
Sure.
But Alex has some inside baseball about him buying Twitter.
Hmm.
I always thought Twitter seemed like a crazy, big, crazy brain. When you look at the whole thing, and I'm like, oh, how do we know Twitter's not already alive?
No, that's a secret. Elon Musk is using it to program his AI Grok. And so they took everybody else off the internet because Google's training its system and didn't want anybody like us on there. I've been told this by high-level people, believe it or not.
Okay.
And so, yes, Musk actually bought Twitter to promote his stuff and politically be involved. But the real reason is to program his AI.
I think a really fun exercise would be anytime Alex says, I'll leave it at that, you say no. No, you're not going to leave it at that.
No, but no, I mean, I'm going to leave it at that.
Okay, no. We're not moving on.
Right. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, why does Elon Musk want to train an AI? What is that about? Seems suspicious. Anyway, I think like Kurt Metzger being like, hey, you know, I always thought of Twitter as a big brain. Maybe it's alive. It's like, this is a fucking knockoff Rogan. What is going on here?
Wow, this is fucking terrible.
Dime store ass Rogan.
Yeah.
Deep thoughts.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's what's funny to me about AI, what I always appreciate about it, because it's always tied up with rich tech people, too. Mm-hmm. You know, that whole combination of things is it's so much like God, you know, for all these people. It is so strange how this superior, infinite power behaves and exactly like you, mm-hmm. and thinks exactly the way you do.
Grok.
Maybe you're an idiot.
Grok.
Just throwing that out there.
So, you know, there are a lot of really rich people that like AI and stuff.
Sure.
One of them, yeah. Tony Stark.
Oh, God.
Jarvis.
All right.
So,
all right. Let's do it then. Let's go. What movie are we doing this
no,
time?
No, that's not actually where this is going.
Oh, okay.
But bring it up because, you know, I think in the movie of Iron Man,
sure,
people think it's really cool the way he's got that, like, he could sort of use his mind to connect to the computer
it's
and
fun.
Stuff.
Yeah,
people enjoy it there. Yeah. Not in the real world.
No, that could be used for negative powers.
Right. And so some of that technology is stuff that there are advancements being made on.
Sure.
And this creates a lot of really complicated questions. And so there was a video from the World Economic Forum conference, 2023 Davos conference, that explored some of this idea.
Right.
And so now that's going to be used as a harsh conspiracy but on the part of Jimmy, and Kurt is bewildered.
Man,
by this.
I hate Kurt.
Here's something that's even creepier. So Mark Zuckerberg says that this is going to happen in the future.
It's here.
Well, here's the WEF.
This is one
telling you that it's already here. So this is about a maybe a 3-minute video, and watch what they have to say. This is kind of mind blowing.
Oh. Sensing your joy, your playlist shifts to your favorite song. Sending chills up your spine as the music begins to play. You glance at the program running in the background on your computer screen and notice a now familiar sight that appears whenever you're overloaded with pleasure. Your theta brainwave activity decreasing in the temporal regions of your brain. You mentally move the cursor to the left and scroll through your brain data over the past few hours. You can see your stress levels rising as the deadline to finish your memo approached, causing a peak in your beta brainwave activity right before an alert popped up, telling you to take a brain break. Your mind starts to wander to the new colleague on your team, whom you know you shouldn't be daydreaming about, given the policy against intra-office romance.
Hey, guys, should we make this video?
Fantasizing just a little.
You're still going to let her? Oh, we're just going
to
do the voiceover? Okay.
Boss will notice your amorous feelings when she checks your brain.
Maybe it's bad.
And shift your attention back to the present. You breathe a sigh of relief when
are
the
we
email
stupid?
She sends you later that day congratulates you on your brain
we have money
quarter, which have earned you another performance bonus.
That's
when you arrive
that's not
at
true.
Work the next day, a somber cloud has fallen over the office. Along with emails, text messages, and GPS location data, the government has subpoenaed employees' brainwave data from the past year. They have compelling evidence that one of your coworkers has committed massive wire fraud. Now they're looking for his co-conspirators. You discover they are looking for synchronized brain activity between your coworker and the people he has been working with. While you know you're innocent of any crime, you've been secretly working with him on a new startup venture. Shaking, you remove your earbuds.
What do you think? Is it a future you're ready for? You may be surprised to learn that it's a future that has already arrived.
Yeah. When I saw this, it was 6 months old, like at the end of Watchmen. We did our plan a half hour ago.
Yeah. So it's here, Alex. I mean, I'm sure you're aware of this, right? That this video exists and that
Jimmy, I'm aware that they want to turn all the workspaces into giant re-education camps. And this is MKUltra being externalized to the public. I had not seen this clip showing how much evil stuff the WEF puts out, how they just normalize. You're going to eat bugs. You're going to drink sewage water, which LA's now doing. You're going to live in a 250-square-foot 5G oven apartment, coffin apartment. No, you think Alex Jones would seen this. I had not seen this. I'm, like, literally yelling at my producer.
I haven't seen the memes yet.
Mic off saying, get this. And that shows why you're important. We're all important because this assault is so huge. And notice what she said. In Star Trek, when the Borg cube arrives, they say, resistance is futile, you will be assimilated. And it's
Wizard
always
bugs.
A woman they hire. They admit in their documents, so it's less threatening.
Sexy Klaus Schwab.
Hey, yeah, don't be scared. It's already here. Don't be scared. So, sorry, Jimmy. You guys are so good, though. That's why I'm so excited to be on here.
Alex, so when I first saw that, it freaked me out because it had about 600 views. That's it. I had about 600 views.
Yeah.
And I watched it three times because I couldn't understand if she was for or against this. I noticed the guy in the back giggling like while she's saying that. But if you look her up, it's called Brain Transparency. I still can't tell if she's for or against it.
It's a scam.
She goes,
it's not real. It's imaginary. It's pretend.
It's a discussion.
It's a bullshit lady stealing money from people.
It's here already.
God, I hate all of you.
Upset by it or scared about it. She's all giggles.
Well, it's here, Jimmy.
She's all giggles.
I hate them all.
So this was from the 2023 Davos conference, and the speaker is Nita Farahani. She's using that story in the voiceover thing to illustrate potential applications of already existing technologies in order to present an ethical dilemma. If these technologies exist, and as even greater technologies are innovated, how can we protect privacy? If AI comes along to the point where it can essentially decode your thoughts, what implications does that have on how we need to order society to protect privacy? She's very clearly not in favor of the scenario that she lays out, but if you're a pretty dull, conspiracy-minded person who's obsessed with finding new little clips to pretend are revealing WEF plots, then you can see how this clip might be a little confusing. Also, they don't include any of the rest of her speech.
Yeah.
Just the nightmarish little
fucking stupid
scenario that is being used as the jump-off point to explore ethical implications of technology.
Yeah.
And that's intentional. Is why I have context. It's one thing to be skeptical and question the elites. I'll support that, and I think that's a healthy thing to do.
Sure.
But this is an entirely different thing. WEF fear-mongering is a primary driver of conspiracy attention economies at this point, so people like Alex and Jimmy are deeply incentivized to find the next new exciting thing to scare people about them. That's why Alex is so excited to hear about this. Oh, I told my producers to go get this. He hadn't seen the memes yet. He hadn't stumbled across somebody posting a little clip of this so he could cover it on his show. Jimmy beat him to the punch. Jimmy's doing better at finding WEF clips.
Where is Count Dankula when you need him?
Carpe Donctum.
Why isn't the Donk sending you a link immediately?
I don't remember the difference between Carpe Donctum and Count Dankula.
I didn't know they were different people at first. I thought they were the same person.
Carpe Donctum was the guy who made a lot of memes.
Sure.
And Count Dankula was the guy who got his dog to do a Nazi salute.
Is that what the guy did? Okay. Yeah. All right. Boy, I'll never know the difference.
You remember?
Sorry, guys.
Remember a little bit earlier we were talking about trajectories.
I do. What a weird.
Yeah, Count Dankula is a perfect example of that.
Yeah,
he trajectories. Is a figure in the right wing.
What you gonna do?
Because he got his dog to,
he got
do,
his
a
dog to do a Nazi salute. That's my fun. I enjoy like reading headlines now. The delightful headlines that should be from the past, mm-hmm. but still exist today because people don't know. Like, whatever Nikki Haley said that the slavery didn't start the Civil War or whatever. And it's like, listen, it's 2023. If you think that anybody doesn't know that, you're misunderstanding the conversation. The conversation is, should we bring slavery back? Not, why did it start the Civil War? Mm-hmm. Or did it start the Civil War?
Right.
You're not listening if Carpe Donctum becomes a famous person for getting a dog to do a Nazi salute. Do you understand that we don't need the Nikki Haley doesn't know the Civil War? Bullshit. Fuck you. Mm. You're insane.
We need more Ben Carson pyramids were made for grain.
Yes.
That
absolutely.
Kind of headline. That's what we need.
That's the shit right there.
So we have one last clip here,
okay.
And it's because things kind of fall apart a tiny bit,
huh?
And we'll discuss on the other side of that what's going on.
All right.
They're all in this big combine. They're all in this mind control, scientific, mad scientist cult, and they're all told, okay, now it's time to roll out the next phase, and this is going on right now. They have the UN treaty, the latest draft, takes control of our national medical responses to any new disease, allows them to arrest or round up or take anybody they want away. Anybody that gets in the way of the lockdown and public safety can also be disappeared. And the UN sets the policy. Who created the UN? The military-industrial complex at the end of World War II to establish the world government.
So let me do you have more time to talk or do you have to go?
I can stay here. I can stay here 2 hours if you want.
Okay. Let's take a break. We're having a little bit of an audio problem. Let me recall you on Zoom. Do you want to do that or no?
We think it's on his end right now because it kind of clips every so often.
Okay, so let's take a 2-minute break and we'll come right back.
So Alex's shit is glitching up real bad, sure. And so they need to take a break.
Mm.
And this is unfortunately, or fortunately, where the recording that I was able to find ends.
Ooh.
So I know that they do come back and sure. talk more, sure. but I don't have that.
Good.
I would have recorded this as it was happening, presumably, mm-hmm. but we were recording when it was
right.
happening.
Right.
And so I wasn't even aware that it had started until too late.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I don't have the rest of this. Jimmy hasn't put it out, and I don't know if he will even put out the full unedited version. So I don't know. If someone else has the rest of this, we could cover the rest in a part two. But for now, this is basically where we're at.
And it's not like I would be shocked if there was something in the second part that was so mind-blowing that Kurt...
The second part is where Jimmy really gets confrontational about Alex thinking yeah. he's on a mission from God and right. how he wants to expel immigrants from the country and all sorts of it. I'm sure it gets real. Like, get down to business about things that they politically disagree about, sure. you know, and really, yeah. you know.
Well, the first hour is just, you know, filler, a little like, hey,
Bill Maher's
to know
dumb.
You. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I spit on you.
Okay.
So I don't know. How do you feel having listened to this?
I feel like, I think one of the things that I feel is fear.
Mm.
Like, I feel... that maybe let me put it this way. I would be curious to be inside the mind of Kurt Metzger, you know, 15 years ago when I thought he was funny.
Uh-huh.
You know, was he this much of a shithead back then?
Maybe, maybe not.
Because to me, like,
I think it's funny that your primary first thought is about the third banana on the show.
Well, I mean, the other two can go fucking shooting themselves in the... Yeah. What's interesting to me, though, is did Kurt didn't know what his trajectory was going to be.
I would assume not.
How could you? Right?
Right.
Did Kurt know that his trajectory could be this bad?
Probably. I mean, the thing that I think about is, like, you know, obviously I do agree with you that there was a time when Kurt, I think, was funny. And maybe there is still some funny in his bones at in some place.
Sure.
But, like, he always was, even then, a pretty, like, contrarian, edgy type comedian.
He was one of those edgelord kind of shitbag guys. But yeah. he was funny, and that's a different story.
Even earlier on, though, you could see the way that this path could unfold.
Sure, sure.
But yeah, I don't know. Here's the part that's scarier even
yeah.
than that, is I would suggest that there is a possibility that they don't even really think that this is a bad trajectory.
No, but that's why I'm afraid,
mm-hmm.
is because if they can't recognize in themselves what led to where they are right now as being a horrible thing,
and
how is it possible, yeah. you know, like in my brain right now, what horrible shit is like swirling around that I should be fighting with a goddamn vibranium shield and shit
to keep from becoming Kurt Metzger? Well, you've done 800 episodes about Alex Jones, so
which
maybe
is about
you're there.
As vibranium shield as it gets, yeah.
but maybe you are in the bad future already.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
Yeah, I don't know. They are a fascinating. Not really.
No,
that sentence was flawed
yeah.
to begin from the jump.
Yep, that's abandoning a sentence. Quick.
I don't fully know if this is a good Wacky Wednesday candidate, Jimmy. I am more interested, possibly, in figuring out exactly what his what is the shape of his shit.
Yeah.
You know, because I do think that it is different than Alex.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't come from like an anti-communist tradition. You know, he was a left guy, and
right.
you know, he made such a big deal out of the Medicare for All, force the vote kind of stuff, and mm-hmm. like that was like one of his big political stances over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I remember
he was attacking AOC and all this because mm-hmm. they wouldn't force the vote on Medicare for All, you fucking assholes, this is a litmus test.
Yeah.
And all this, and now he's associating with people who want Medicare for none. You know, like this is essentially buddying up to and creating a political allegiance and alignment with people who want you and the things that you ostensibly are about
yeah.
gone.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's strange. There has to be some kind of like more connective tissue for what he actually believes and where he's at, but I don't know. I don't. I don't. I don't know if he's entertaining.
You know, I mean, I think of nihilism when I think of Jimmy Dore. Mm. Now, you know, because I think a lot of people think of this self-destruction and nihilism as like that kind of thing. But to me, like the idea of abandoning everything and just being like, everybody's going to die fucking anyways. I might as well hang out with Alex Jones. That is nihilism.
If that is the process.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's true of him as he is.
Yeah. Learning, I don't know if it's entertaining.
Like, oh, it's absolutely not.
I don't get the sense. First of all, I don't get the sense that he's much of a competent host. I don't think anything that he brought to the table was interesting.
No. Agreed. Being a worm, not interesting.
Yeah.
Even Grima a worm tongue. He had a nice little smile.
That's the thing I'm wrestling with is like, all right, maybe this is an interesting other offshoot thing to do.
Sure.
But then I imagine listening to hours of him. Oh. Like, oh, no.
Oh, no, that's no good.
Yeah.
Now, there's like a different kind of formula. And I don't know what it is, but it does feel like people are not as interested in the show aspect of the show.
Mm.
You know, like, this does not feel like he cares about doing a show.
Mm.
What is a show anymore?
It's kind of an act of, like, collaborating with Alex more than it is a show.
Yeah.
There isn't, like, real depth or like, information about Alex that comes out outside of unchallenged lies that Alex says to him, which are the same lies that Alex says in almost every interview. So it's not like you're not getting anything out of him. You're just doing the thing that people do.
Yeah. And I think that's what I get from Jimmy Dore.
Yeah.
Is that this is a thing he does.
Yeah.
This is not a, I want to do a show. This is not a, I have a passion for this. This is nothing like that. This is, I literally have no other skills.
It may be.
He doesn't even have this skill.
I'm uninspired.
Yeah.
Kind of by him.
Yeah. Very much so.
I don't know. We'll have to think on it.
Mm.
But yeah, maybe we'll do a part two if I can find the other audio.
Yeah, we'll see.
Maybe we'll do another episode about Jimmy at some point. Maybe not.
Who knows?
I don't know. But either way, we'll be back.
Indeed, we will.
Until then, we have a website.
We do. It's knowledgetried.com.
And we'll be on social media TBD.
Someday.
But we'll be back. Until then, I'm Neo. I'm Leo. I'm DZX Clark. I spit in your face.
No!
Woo, yeah, woo, yeah, woo!
And now here comes the sex robots.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.